Hello, this is Living Think. This is the Kustagania Forum, Open Forum Program. It is June 14th, 2010. I don't even know what month it is. Hello, everybody. It's good to have you here. If anybody wants to talk, and I hope that people want to talk because this is an open forum program, just right-click on your own name and click Request Talk Power, and I will turn your microphone on. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot going on from the weekend. I mean, the Friday and Saturday and Sunday shows are strenuous enough. Today, I started making a version of my historical essays for a book, for a hard copy book. It's going to be a paperback, I think. It's not going to be a hardcover. And it's probably going to be about 130, 140 pages, I expect. A book much the size of the Kustagania New Testament, but in paperback. And I hope to have that in 6 to 8 weeks. It'd probably be a lot quicker than that, but 6 to 8 weeks is realistic. There are other things, projects I have slated for July that are going to probably get priority. One of them is moving Kustagania.org to its own server. And that's because I have too many limitations with my website that I've outgrown. And I really have to have it on a server. And I can't hold off much longer on that. Hello, Ken. Hello, Munica. How you doing?
How do you do? You called today several times?
No, last night. I called last night.
Well, twice, I was right here.
Well, I called twice. I called at 10:30 and I called at about 10 after 11.
Huh. Did you get the answering machine?
I understand that some web pages are very distracting.
Like yours. Did you get my answering machine?
Yes, I even left a message.
Okay, but it's been acting goofy because I pressed it and then deleted the message.
Well, I was going to walk you through the video thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least get you started with that.
Well, if you want to set a time, then I'll for sure be here and I'll answer the phone. I didn't even hear the phone ring.
Yeah, well, it might have to wait till Wednesday or Thursday. I don't know, unless you want to do it in the morning.
Oh, we could do it in the morning if you want.
Okay. Maybe tomorrow, late tomorrow morning.
Okay. All right.
The 7 of 9, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good, Bill. Thank you. You know, I had my microphone shut off, and yet my little dot was lighting up. How does that happen?
Oh, it shouldn't be. I mean, you were you requested to talk, so I turned your mic on, but you can mute yourself there.
It isn't because I have something to say, but I might spout off on something here. I don't know.
Oh, okay. That's okay. I hope somebody has something to say, because I don't have anything to say. Did anybody get what I was saying yet on the program yesterday about humanism and the market and the image of the beast, worshiping the image of the beast?
I didn't catch the show.
Okay. Sorry.
That was a Sword Brethren show?
Yeah. You didn't catch it either?
I got in about 15 minutes late, so maybe I...
Yeah, it was in the first 5 minutes. It was in the first 5 minutes.
Okay, then I missed it then.
Oh, well. I blew that one. I should have asked a better question. I should have raised a better topic of conversation.
Well, say it again.
Basically, I think that's what's going on right now. The Jews are making making Christians to worship the image of the beast because Christians are worshiping Jews. And it's Jewish humanism and the fact that the Jews believe that they're their own Messiah. And that's what I'm led to believe now, that worshiping the image of the beast is. It's man who is departed from the ways of God is nothing but a beast. And we had this beast series of empires because that was the rule of the natural man over, you know, rather than the rule of God over the people of God. So they were called beast empires. And then the papacy was the beast because the papacy hit the second beast of Revelation because the popes thought that they were a replacement for God, as if God needs a replacement. And that's what vicarious means.
Well, are the Jews a beast or an image of a beast?
Well, they're the image of the beast and we're worshiping them. I mean, it's a metaphor, but
I thought you guys were saying it was a TV or something.
Well, Yeah, you know, you could curse God in this country today, but you can't curse a Jew. That's a major sin, right? In society, anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what I'm taking that to mean. I mean, that it struck me the other day that that had to be it. I can't, the mark of the beast, that's another story. Yeah, you know, and I think that was fulfilled at least once before in the past with the popes and the towers of interdict and excommunication, where they could actually destroy men by excommunicating them. And they did so quite often.
Okay.
Well, that's my line of thought on that topic anyway. I thought it might be interesting to talk about. Hello, Robert.
Hey, I like this. I just, this activation and non-activation. Yeah, I actually agree with you, Bill, on the, it seems to me that our entire society is in a slow worship of the beast here, or fast worship, however you want to go about it. I mean, every single system, money system, the law system, the licensing systems, and people go right along with it as if there's nothing wrong with any of it.
Right, they all want to know what their credit score is. That might be the mark. That might be the number. What's your credit score?
666. Yeah, that's my credit score.
Mine's probably about -666, but that's all right. That's right where I want it.
They ought to call it a death score.
Yes, they should. They should call it a death score.
Bill?
Yes.
How do I stop the voice saying user entered your channel and things like that?
Well, this is you got to click settings and options.
Uh huh.
And then you have to click on notifications on the left hand side.
Okay.
And then you have to choose from the sound pack dialog at the top. You have to choose sounds deactivated.
It was what? Which one? Default sound pack?
Yes. Choose sounds deactivated.
Oh, sounds deactivated. Okay. And that should do it. Then click OK?
Yes.
All right. That should do it. Sometimes I cannot hear people because it's... I think she's a European because she says instead of saying microphone activated, she'll say it's activated.
The software comes from Germany.
Yeah. Nice sounding
voice.
She's just
fine. She sounds like my next date. She's just fine.
Yeah.
Well, leave my girlfriend alone.
I won't call her up then. She liked that one
hello,
I sent you?
Hello.
Excuse me, Kent. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say she has a nice voice, but she's intrusive.
Oh, yeah, well, if it's a woman. Nah, I'm going to have every woman in the forum mad at me now.
Hey, perfect number of Yahweh is 7, and number of man is 6, right?
Well, if you want to give any credence to that.
How did they arrive at 7? Or who arrived at it, and how?
How did I arrive at 7?
Now, how did the people, the numerology and stuff, how did they arrive at that number?
I don't know. Somehow that's in Scripture somewhere. I don't know where that's at.
I think it all comes from Bullinger, and he hung out with Jews and got it from the Kabbalah.
Ah.
That's my opinion. I don't give that stuff a whole lot of credence. I mean, I know that some numbers seem to have significance. I don't know what the 153 fish means. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to pretend to.
Heck, Jones pretends to.
Well, he pretends to know a lot of things he doesn't really know.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm more into the clear word of Scripture and its context and history. The number things never meant a lot to me, to be honest. I know they mean a lot to a lot of people. I don't want to deride anybody, but they never meant a lot to me.
People read into it too much.
Yes. And I really believe a lot of Bullinger's, you know, suppositions come from the Kabbalah. He was hanging out with Theodore Herzl. I mean, that to me, the guy loses all credibility. No Christian commentator can hang out with Jews and have credibility. Just read the epistles of John and Paul.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be with any of those people.
Right. So why would we just rather ignore the numbers?
Except
for their plain meaning.
Our own kinsmen who are, desperately wicked, involved and we're not even supposed to hang out with.
Well, right. We're supposed to separate them from our community, right? I mean, that's 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Put and Paul quotes Leviticus. Put the wicked out from among you. And that's what we should do.
And the Jews have separated everyone else from their community.
Yeah, right. They have. Except, well, except on certain evenings when they like to go carousing the streets.
Right. It's all hypocrisy. But, I mean, at least they make a show of it.
Yes, they do.
And we fall over ourselves to throw it all out.
Yeah, we do. We fall all over ourselves to accept the sinners and the wicked and the perverts and, oh, they're all God's children. And, oh, it's just sickening.
I was at the SAR, and it was an incredible trip. I was only there 10 minutes, and I must have saw 7 Namzers and, you know, and couples. It's incredible. Where were you? At a store. Oh. It's crazy. You know, the black people we have in this country, they're all Namzers. Not all of them. Close. I bet you were at a Walmart.
I was at a Walmart today for the first time in about 6 weeks.
There was this Hispanic guy there with a long ponytail strutting around. I wanted to, let's just say I wasn't going to be his friend. Just absolutely disgusting. Yeah, these people flaunt.
You know what's been disturbing me lately is all this missionary work. They're going to countries and helping everybody but their own brethren.
There's more than enough work right here. You don't have to go anywhere else, and you don't have to go to any other race.
Well, even so, if you're going to go to another country, you should look for the lost sheep of Israel and not bring back the...
Absolutely true.
Haitians or the Chinese or the whatever.
Oh, hey, I went on Incogman, and he had a great story on there about this do-gooder went down to Haiti to help Haitians out, and she got raped on top of her house, and then she went on to blame white men for it happening to her. Wait a minute. She says, I was trying to tell him I was his brother and to stop the oppression of the white man. And she was a Malcolm X scholar. You know, all he did was slap it in her face and go on with his business.
He had no idea what she was talking about.
Oh, he didn't care what she was talking about.
She deserves every bit of it.
Oh, every moment. It's too bad it wasn't 5 of them.
Why stop there? Why not the whole island? I mean,
it's insane. They're perhaps so brainwashed, it's incredible.
I know, that's what fascinates me. And you sit there and you talk. I've had not only family members, but quite a few people going on missionary trips, and especially to Haiti recently. You talk to them and you say, why are you going down there? You're going to put these people in a certain position, and 10 days after you leave, maybe even shorter period of time, everything that all the work you put in is going to be destroyed. They're freaking animals.
I think it gives these missionaries a feeling of superiority.
Yes, I don't know.
Good point, Bill, or whoever said that.
Yeah, that
they do it out of their own vanity is exactly why they do it.
You could see where they do it out of the white guilt idea that the Jews are pushing on us with the television, newspapers, magazines, advertisements, everything, where white people feel bad about being good or being successful, having a house of their own. And they have to feel like they have to go out there and extend themselves out to people who have nothing and to kind of get down there with them and show that they can be just like them.
Well, at some point it's going to end, because if you continue to bring in these other countries, or you bring in people from other countries and you continue to have Namzers in your own country, it's going to collapse in on itself.
Yeah.
And I don't even think at that point that most of these whites will understand what they did.
They'll blame everybody else.
Exactly. And it's very frustrating to talk to people, because they look at you like you're your planet. But it is interesting how far it could go.
It won't go on much longer, really.
I think it could go on for quite a while.
Yeah, it won't go on for another 50
God
years.
Forbid.
The reason it's not going to go on very long is if you look at the statistics, in the birth rates, you have to have 2.1 births per 1,000 women to have any population or race just to break even and exist. And the blacks are having 5 and 6, and the Hispanics 8, and so the Muslims are 8. But the white race has been birthing in 0.4, which means we are 4 or 5 times below the replacement level. And you compare it to a bucket of water. You've got this bucket, and it's got a hole in the bottom. 5 cups of water drip out. 1 cup is poured in at the top. How long will it take for the bucket to be empty? Well, we've got one white baby being born for every 5 or 6 that white people die. Whereas the blacks have 1 dying and 5 or 6 being born. And the Hispanics, 1 Hispanic dies and there's 8 or more being born. So it's obvious that we're dying out faster than we're birthing in, and we won't survive to the end of the century as a race of people. The white race will be completely gone. And that's statistics, and that's just the way it is. Now, it could change. Our God can do whatever he wants, but at the rate it's going, he's taking the best out first, I guess.
Because well, we're I not agree with that, but I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow.
Not tomorrow, but it will by the slow process of a failure to regenerate ourselves. It will just dwindle and dwindle. And it'll rapidly increase as it goes along, because the children of today, they estimate the average home has 1.25 children per house, which is kind of a statistical thing, you know. But there's only 1 or 2 children, but you need 3 at least just to break even. We've been having most of the people have none to 1. So we're not taking our place and occupying it and holding it by birthing in enough babies. Just been
well. I've had 6. I volunteer to have 6 more if anybody wants to help.
Well, I've had 3.
Yeah. I'm afraid I've failed.
I have a young Irish girl who works for me.
Sorry, Rob. You can ask for your mind. I mean, as long as I get to pick them. I'm kidding.
Named Dunsmore. Claims she doesn't want to have children.
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of women that don't, white women that don't want to have children. Oh, I don't want to have children. There's so many people in the world and all kind of stuff, you know.
Nuts.
Yeah.
I was just on a trip with a couple of women from Germany, and they didn't want to have any kids.
Well, when you look at there has to be a complete racial awakening before anyone would probably encourage someone to have children, because the future of those who will be here 30 or 40 years from now, it's going to be pretty miserable because there'll be so few whites that they're just going to pounce on them and beat them up, and they're not going to have, they will not die a peaceful death.
Well, the Holy Spirit's going to move through our people.
Might not.
Where has he been? Well, he's with us always. He's in this room.
Well, I believe so. It's just his will that our kingdom be handed over to the beast. And now we're worshiping the image of the beast. The Jews are in charge. And mainstream Christians are worshiping their image.
But I think that's only because of ignorance, not because of any divine will that's put it on us for no reason. I think it's because of our ignorance, a lack of knowledge. We don't know who the Jews really are. We don't know what their agenda is. So we fall into their pit because we have been maltaught by the preachers and the priests and the pastors that's their job to tell us exactly what Yahshua told us. But they're not telling us what Joshua told us. They're telling us the exact opposite. So we go in the direction we were taught and guided. And that's why we're in the way we are. If we were alert and we were knowledgeable, we would not tolerate this stuff. But
in the late 1800s, our people got real comfortable with this nation. And instead of seeking the word of God and the ways of God, they started seeking Jewish attractions, sports, music.
Yep.
Jazz, the whole roaring 20s mindset, the booze, the partying. It's been with us for 100 years now. I mean, there's always been a segment of us that have pursued those things, but for the last 100 years, most of us have pursued those things.
Yeah.
They stopped. Even the ones that have gone to church the last 100 years have simply accepted whatever their pastors have told them.
Yeah.
And not read the book.
And there's the problem, is the pastors have not been telling us. Although there's a certain point where individual responsibility has to kick in.
Well, that's why we're being punished. We have no individual responsibility. People don't read the book.
They want license.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I call the television the one-eyed Satan, the altar of unrighteousness. In the living room of almost every home in America, upon which they sacrifice so many of their hours of their life in the observation and worship of this satanic image as presented on that screen. It's a one-eyed Satan. And they're sacrificing their lives. 1 hour of church on Sunday and 4 or 5 hours every night on television.
And until the early 20th century, the Bible was a huge part of every man's education and woman.
Yep, yep.
And now it's no part of our education. Now it's superfluous to most people. If they ever read anything from it, it's only a verse or two. I was like that myself, so I know how it is to be like that, right?
Which should temper our anger when we see people doing those things, when we don't, but used to. But there's nothing worse than a reformed sinner, because they insist on everybody being so righteous.
Well, you know, I think it's because you see, once you've awoken to the problem, you marvel at how other people don't.
Yeah.
Like, how could I wake up to this? How could I see this? And not, I'm speaking, I'm speaking,
collectively.
Yeah, you know, collectively. Any one of us could say that. Why me? How was I awakened? Why did I get chosen? Why? And you look at all your brethren, and a lot of them are probably smarter than you are, and more inquisitive or more intelligent or whatever. And you wonder how come they can't awaken to it.
One of the things you have to believe there is right and wrong. I mean, that's one of the basic concepts that has to be. I've always known in my own being right and wrong. I don't know if it's from my religious upbringing young or it was just there. I knew it.
That are written in our hearts, you know. A lot of times when I was young, I did things that I knew were wrong and did them anyway, though. But you have that law written in your heart, and sometimes you trespass anyway.
But if you look back on it, wasn't there some kind of inducement?
Oh, yeah.
Like watching the television and the lascivious sex there in the movies and the inclination or the impulse to smoke dope or drink, whatever it is, and following all the other people.
I was pretty good not following the majority of the crowd, but I still... The worst thing, it kind of led me astray for a while. My grandfather and I went to the dump. There was a whole stack of magazines. Gosh, nude women, you know, partially. Back then it was, you know, just topless. That had
Well, they take
don't
the,
beat yourself up.
They take the normal urge for women and twist it.
I hate to tell you, I was about 12, and my father gave me a stack. I swear. He thought it was the right thing to do, I guess.
Not queer.
Yeah, right. He didn't have to worry about that.
But gosh help the neighbor girl. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. They pander to our base desires to demoralize us, to put us under their sway. That, you know, they've written it down. That's exactly what they do.
Josephus even mentioned that, where he said that... One of the prophets or something of Balaam, he was asked by the Edomites or somebody, you know, how are you going to get beat up on the Israelites? And he says, I don't know. God protects them. I mean, every time somebody thinks about beating up on an Israelite, God goes over and stops them from doing it. And then he finally came to the conclusion. He says, well, the best way to do that is that you can't hit them because God will hit you if you try to hit his chosen people. Well, here's what you do, he says. This is in Josephus. I could quote it somewhere, but I don't have it. He said, get all your best-looking women and parade them around among the young Israelite men and entice them.
Well, you're talking about Numbers 24 and 25.
Yeah. He said, set them in front of the tents, arrayed in your finest jewelry and clothes, and let the men of Israel come in unto them.
Yeah. And
That's the story that's in Numbers 24 and 25. Josephus gives a much fuller account of it. Yes.
But the problem there is, why were these young men willing to do that when they had the older men and these priests that were supposed to be so good at it and at preaching, but they let these young men go off and do this? So who's responsible here? Is it the young men whose passions are really hot in their teens and early 20s? Or is it the preacher's fault that these young men were allowed to go and do that?
Well, I have a paper written on it, Sin in the First Epistle of John. Maybe you should check it out. I didn't expect total silence, so I'm sorry.
Between Bill and Clifton, so much is covered. It's really great. And I haven't read it all.
Sin in the First Epistle of John. It's not the man that's weak who is the most responsible for his sin. I mean, he has to confess it, of course, but it's the man who authors the sin. It's the creator of the sin. It's the panderer and not the weak. It's the pornographer and not the idiot that rents one now and then. It's the
he says it's Hugh Hefner.
Well, yeah, this is a perfect example.
The pusher, not the user.
Yeah. Exactly.
The user should be educated.
The brother has to be pulled out of the pit. It's the bastard that pushed him into it that's responsible. Sin in the First Epistle of John. I strongly recommend you read it.
I will, Joe.
Well, what else do we have going here? It's don't you think it's very selfish for a man or a woman not to... I mean, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of men and women that want children and can't have them. But don't you think it's the ultimate in selfishness for a man or a woman to be born into this world and not want to have children himself to continue his race? That's a horrible thing.
That's Esau.
Absolutely. It was considered a disgrace among the Hebrews to be born childless and to die childless. And that's that's why Abraham, it was so important for him to have that promise that a seed would come from his loins. And that's why Lot's daughters did what they did, because they thought it was the end of the world and it was done. So they said, hey, our father can't die without seed.
So in a way, they were trying to do the right thing.
Well, yeah. And that's the way it's presented in the Bible.
But they end up being cast out of the Israelite lineage because of this incest. Is that right?
Right. Sometimes we think God needs help, right? And that's the stupid missionary whore that goes to Haiti and gets raped, thinking God needs help. It's God's fault he didn't give those people the skills to do what they need to help themselves. So we got to go help them. And she gets raped. And then blames it on white men. And she's blaming it on God. And it's nothing but her own damn fault. And she did it thinking she was doing good. I mean, it's a disease. And that's the problem. Yeah, you know, Ken said most of those missionaries get a feeling of superiority. I think they do. I think Ken's right. They get the feeling of superiority because they think they could help God. Because he can't lift these people up. They're going to go do it themselves.
Yeah. Yep, that's I think, but you know, if you were around a large bunch of beasts of the field, that's not very difficult to feel like you can truck them on things.
Well, you know something? I was around a large bunch of beasts of the field all my life. And I never had the urge to go there, Russ.
Well, yes.
They're just straight animals. And most of those missionaries, they're raised in circumstances that have nothing to do with... I mean, come on, they come from these little white towns and villages in New England.
Yeah, they don't know what it's like to be down there.
Right, they don't know what the animals are like. They come from rural North Dakota or Minnesota. They have no idea what these beasts are like.
They think they're like us.
Yeah, they do.
With a tan.
Pilgrim wants to make a support group, a male support group channel, and put you as the channel master. How about that? Pilgrim said, I think we need a support group meeting for men who want to talk about women problems.
Hey, wait a minute. Maui Pat's my contact at that. He's quite a character. I showed one of my liberal clients a DVD. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. It's a Judeo-Christian video. They point out that Klebold and Harris were targeting Christians and all that. And I showed that to him, and his remark was, well, it's good that they're not showing that it's just the black artists that are dealing out this violent rock and roll. Can you believe it? I was astonished. He put a bad whitey even on that.
I remember watching something on, it was on a cable television years ago, not too many years ago, and they're talking about a hard metal, I think it's called?
Heavy metal.
And they're interviewing all these people like Kiss. One guy says they're four Jewish guys that like dressing up, like putting makeup on their face, you know. And you notice as they go through all these people, they're all Jews. All these
the majority
people are Jews, you know.
Yeah.
And they're and the young people are always holding out this satanic sign where they got the index and little finger out. And
yeah.
I think the thumb is up also, but I don't know if that's a satanic sign, if that's a different sign.
They try to claim it's a sign of love, but it's the satanic sign when those bad people are doing it.
Yeah, and all the people that are around there being interviewed are always kind of holding their hands and pointing the fingers, the horns to themselves and stuff like that, you know. It's like the gang signs of the Negroes. But most of them are Jews.
In America.
Yeah.
Real quick, I tried to go to your site. I put it in my bookmarks, and I couldn't find the where all the different races of Jews were. Remember you were telling me that night? Where do I look on your site to find those pictures?
Here and see. You go to, it's in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Got it.
Where it says articles.
Appreciate.
You know, the first one. The second one is an non-annotated. Mine is got a lot of annotations. And then you scroll down a ways, past that, and past a couple other things, and then this is a rogues gallery of Jewish faces. Purpose of that is to show that not all Jews have the classic hook nose, you know, and the hook nose Jew and the fat lips and stuff like that, and the short fat guys, stuff like that. That's not the way the Jews are. Those are not the dangerous Jews. The dangerous Jews are the ones that I have in this rogues gallery, where you wouldn't think that they were Jews. They look more like white people.
What do I click on to see this?
You go to gentlecynic.net, GENTLECYNIC.net, and then at the home page, on the right column there, click on, under articles, click on Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And then scroll down a ways.
Gentle Cynic.
Yeah.
S-Y-N-I-C?
C-Y-N-I-C.
.net.
Yeah. And there's no WW in there. Just plain.
Bill, have you got some big clunky machine going over there, or what is that noise?
No.
Father's dog.
No, the dog's upstairs. I lock him upstairs for programs.
When you light up, it sounds like some out of whack machine clunking along or something.
It may have been me sipping my tea. Maybe I should move my mic out of my mouth. Sorry.
We thought you were cleaning up the basement.
No, I'm sitting here quiet. I mean, I have three computers running, but they don't make that much noise. There's nothing else down here. My chair.
I bet it's that. I bet it's feedback. Okay, what do I look under?
Now, scroll down to a rogues gallery of Jewish faces.
Yeah, you know, there's a kind of like a similar thing on the Christigenia forum, too. That's, let me find it.
You got the Revolver map on there, too.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of memory for me.
I'm not finding it.
You're on the website there?
Yeah, I'm on unannotated. I can't even talk.
Go to the one above it where it says Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Not the
below that, you'll see the Rogues Gallery of Jewish Faces, but I think that's only one of them. Two of them that I go to.
Oh, I see.
So
I clicked on the wrong one.
Yeah, the first one is an explanation of why I'm doing this. Now you scroll down there and you see big letters. Kind of like the nose. No.
Anthropological genetic markers in the.
Well, that's a heavy
one. Oh, here
one.
It is.
That proves that the Jews and the Palestinians are of the same blood.
Closely related.
Yeah, yeah. And in Zion, from the standpoint of Jewish victims is good.
Gallery.
Day in the Life is from the book, A Day in the Life of Israel. And then below that is the Faces of the Media and Politics. And a classic down below there, though the Jews seem to be dead, they never really are. That's a quote from Mussolini.
The best thing on the site is that picture on the front page.
Dog.
That's my dog. It's my pooch.
Oh, is that your dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put it up there for a joke, and Ron liked it, and he insisted on keeping it.
Wait to see what I'd like to do more of.
For some reason, the images aren't counted again.
They're not there?
It tries to load it into my Word. And
these are PDFs, I think. Should come out as a PDF. I'm getting it here.
Yeah, my Works Word processor is popping up. Yeah, I've done a study of that. It's shocking how many you couldn't tell. That's why Yeshua said we'd know them by their fruit. They would be, well, there's some at the bottom there with George.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's,
I think I've got it.
Look at the faces on those guys. I mean,
no, I have no, I just get Word doc.
Should be a PDF.
Oh, it should be a PDF?
Yeah, if you clicked on the link there, it should come up as a PDF.
So, is this the miscellaneous images that I click on? Rogues Gallery face and this?
Yeah, he doesn't. I got to get that link better.
The miscellaneous image is just a text explaining why I've written.
Where do I click on?
Images that you want to see would be the next one down where it says A Day in the Life.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. The other one is self-explanatory.
I see it.
Got it now?
Yeah. You're right. And well, these guys are deceiving.
Gets better with the other one, with the faces, media and politics.
There, Ron, just put the link to the PDF in there. I just put the link to the PDF in the chat to make it easy.
Oh, okay. And then we've got The Strange Case of Murder Incorporated.
I got to show you how to use the little PDF icon to mark where a PDF is.
Okay. Write that down.
Well, the kid on the right, I could spot him right away. First group.
Yeah, right.
The girl in the center with her eyes half closed, I would spot her. The kid to the right of the, or left of the kid on the right, he would have fooled me. Looking up, pretty.
Yeah, well, the thing is that they have a high adoption rate, and they also have a high interracial marriage rate. So they get harder and harder to spot with each generation. I mean, that's why Christ said the wheat and the tares, you can't tell them apart until they come to full, until the harvest time. That's the way it is.
Well, look at that redhead. There's redheads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You wouldn't know it.
Fooled me.
You wouldn't know it.
Hey, Muniker, the guy with the big nose and no teeth. Is that a false make picture or is that an actual shot?
Which one are you in?
I'm on where you got 1, 2, 3, and you got Mr. Guerrero at the right, and you got that dirt-eating blonde in the middle, and you got Streisand as number 6. He's the number 1 guy in the far number 1, in the far top left corner.
Which page are you on? I mean, which,
I'm on,
are you in Faces, or are you?
Yeah, I'm in Faces on the PDF file. I think it's page 4 or 5.
Okay.
You pass Bernard Lewis, and then you keep coming down until you come to,
Oh, that multi-picture? The cartoons? Yeah, that's the classic ones that they put out there all the time. If you look at them, they never look that way.
Yeah, Gerald Levin, he wouldn't fool me. Oh, this guy wouldn't. Bernard Lewis. He's a Hittite.
Hittite.
The lip on that guy. He was a what, you say?
Hittite.
A Jedi?
Hittite
would have large ears, thick lips, a big nose, a sloping forehead, eye orbits, and basically look like a troll. I mean, that's what Hittites are. I think that's where we got the troll character from.
Oh, I use the same group of pictures on number 4. The lady in the middle is Annie. Leibovitz, and she was the gay lover of Susan Sontag, who made the statement that the white race is the cancer of the world.
Yeah.
What about the guy next to her? Oh, yeah. Ariel Sharon? No, his teeth looks like he's only got a couple teeth left, and his nose is about twice the size of his face.
Yeah, that's
number one there.
Yeah,
number one. God, awful.
I don't. Hey, you can't ask me how Eve could ever fall for that. Now, come on.
Maybe it was a fermented apple.
Yeah, she was drinking heavy. I'm sorry. Well, look at there. Timothy Geithner and Obama. No, they're both different types.
The same being. Yeah. Now look at Greenspan and Volcker up there. I mean, obvious.
Yeah.
But Geithner, you wouldn't know.
No, you'd have some doubts. Came across Richard Haas. A lot of times they have double letters in their names, especially of the German. A lot of times they'll have the double letters.
Yeah, but so would a lot of the Germans, I think.
Yeah, that might be true. Do they?
There's a big difference, apparently, between Steen and Stein, and I don't know what the difference is. I haven't figured it out yet.
I learned that if a Polish name Zero. ends with a Y or an I, if it ends with a Y, it's generally Jewish. I think that's what it
is. Somewhere I got an article I downloaded from the Internet that explained that, and they've sort of adulterated that themselves to where you can't tell till you see them.
Strange case. Irving Feinstein was burned and tossed in a lot.
Too bad Diane wasn't with him.
Joe the Boss Mascara, holding an ace.
Yeah, bloody ace at that.
Abe the Kid Twist. You know, most Americans believe that the Mafia was Italian.
Yeah. And technically they were Italian Jews.
Look at the squealer, Abe Pretty Levine. A lot of true Israel in him. That's what throws us. You got to remember, they got a lot. They've got Israel, you know, back from Esau.
Most of their victims were their own people. You don't watch television, you think they're
they know how dangerous they are.
I like the one about Bugsy Goldstein once complained because he was listed only as public enemy number 6.
Oscar the Poet Friedman.
You mean Bugsy Siegel?
Bugsy Siegel.
No, this is Bugsy Goldstein. It's on the PDF page 3.
Did they get that thing Bugsy from their personal habits or what?
I think Bugsy Siegel, you know, apparently what I read, nobody ever called him Bugsy because he was sort of a Bugsy kind of guy, you know. He was very volatile and he didn't know what he's going to do next, so they called him Bugsy. So you didn't say that to his face. Or maybe he said it once.
So what was his claim to fame?
He founded a big thing out there in Las Vegas.
No, I mean Bugsy Goldstein or.
Oh, he was one of the leaders of what they call it the combination, what the newspaper people call it, Murder Incorporated. They were just guys that were murderers and they were for hire. He was one of the leaders of it. Now he was a decision maker. He wasn't the one that did the killing. He just did the decision.
30 years after millions of Jews start to pour into the country, we have all kinds of organized crime. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And we put up with it.
I thought Meyer Lansky was in charge of that outfit one time.
Good question. Maybe later.
Hey, you guys, these people are they're not even people. They're irredeemable. I don't even think they can be redeemed at all.
Well, of course not. They're twice dead already. Just like Jude says they are.
One of them in here tried to retire, and they killed him. Nobody retires from the Mafia.
Well, that lady that wrote the book School of Darkness that revealed the infiltration of the Catholic Church of 1,100 communists, they told her that, you don't leave us. We either kill you, something else.
Yeah.
She did a good thing by, she might not have been Jewish, but she was Italian. Right, most likely was mixed.
It was over for the Catholic Church with the Dean Medicis and the Borgias. It was over for the Catholic Church long before that. Yahweh knew exactly what would become of the Catholic Church.
That's all.
Maybe he made the Catholic Church. We have something to talk about and learn from.
Hey, Bill, sadly, there is still... I'm sorry.
Bill, I want to ask you a question. And I probably should look it up in the book I bought from you, but I'm going to ask you since you're live. Where it says, I will make you the synagogue of Satan. Is that the way it is in your translation? I don't have your translation in front of me.
I will make you? You'll have to tell me what verse.
Oh, Revelation 2:9 and 3:9. The one says, beware of those who say they are Jews but do lie. I will make them a synagogue of Satan.
No, it doesn't say that in the King James, does it?
Oh,
I don't think so.
Does.
Revelations chapter 2, verse 9, King James. And I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Judeans or Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. They are the synagogue of Satan.
Are.
Revelations 3:9. Yeah, it does say, I will make you.
Yeah, I knew one of them did.
Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Judeans and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them, it's only emphatically repeated, to come and worship before thy feet.
Gotcha.
He's not going to make them. He's going to make them come and worship before thy feet.
Gosh. Hasten the day.
Yeah, right. Big difference, though. I want to see my translation of that verse is, I got a Greek text right next to me, but I'm lazy. Behold, I shall give those from of the congregation of the adversary, saying for themselves to be Judeans, and they are not, but they are liars. Behold, I shall make them that they shall come and worship, and shall worship before your feet, and they may know that I have loved you. So we have that first verb is not make, it's give. And it's, colloquially, it could be translated make, because that's the way we would say that in English. And my translation is exactly literal.
It's out in the car. We got to get Clifton a microphone.
Yeah, I know. I don't. Maybe he doesn't have a Walmart around there or something. Maybe I'll send him one.
I'm sure he's probably working on something right now as he's listening to us.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's not wasting all his time listening to us. That's terrible. If anybody else wants to talk, right-click your name and click Request Talk Power, and I'll turn your microphone on. Joe, Pennsylvania. Joe. That's you, Joe. I can turn it on. just twist people's arms in here, that's all. How you doing, Joe?
Hi, Joe. Pretty good. I thought that was a threat. I was afraid.
No, I was only kidding. I like your avatar.
Yes, I got that just for Commander.
Yes, I'm sure you did.
Everybody knows Chuck Norris is the best.
Commander should come on and voice his opinion about that. Like that's going to happen, right? I'm just kidding.
Come on, let's get on tonight.
Excuse me?
Not you, Commander.
Oh, he was out of the room. What gives, LOL? In other words, he didn't hear any of that.
Commander, get in his chat.
Warrior Son of David, I think Clifton does have a built-in mic, but he does not have headphones. That's what he needs.
Hey, Joe, here's something. Did you pick up on that one guy when you were talking to Brian yesterday, the nigga?
He's been in the chat rooms a few times. I mean, I know that the handle just ain't right, but he's not the first one to come into chat rooms with something with a handle that just ain't right. What? Right? I mean, there have been others.
That guy that came in with the his thing is all in the game. What the heck was his name? He had a black eye as his picture.
Black Hebrew?
No. Just his way of being funny. I can't think of his name right now.
Well, I can't
tell. Gerald knows who it is.
I can't tell if it's immaturity and they're trying to be funny, but to me...
Pilgrim's got Omar Little.
Well, Omar Little, but he's not the guy from last night.
Oh, no. But that's an example of a guy with a strange...
Yeah, right. Yeah. I know Omar Little is a white guy from the Rocky Mountain States. That's all I'll say. But
that's all I need to know.
But the nigger bitches Leo out or nigger bitches Lee Boy out or that's the handle of the guy that was in the forum last night. He's been coming in and out of the forums in the talk show program for a week or so now, maybe 2 weeks. And he seems to be identity. I don't know, but I didn't think he was really a troublemaker, you know. I didn't pay attention. I know there was some friction last night, but I didn't pay attention to it. When I'm doing a program, I'm usually concentrating on a program and not trying to concentrate on the chat room.
I first saw him with Brian and Nico's show, and he got on Nico, and Nico asked Brian to ban him. That was the first I saw. Then when I teamed in at 8 o'clock, he came back, and I seen how he was starting to, you know, bring the same tactics. And it was just bothering me, and that name just bugged me when I see it.
Yeah, it's not the wisest of handles for a Christian brother to choose, right? I mean, a lot of us do silly things, though. I mean, a lot of people have come in with silly handles in the past. And I would say it may indicate a sign of immaturity, and that's true. I'm not going to get, you know, some people just need to be noticed, I guess. I mean, nigga bitches, Lee Royale is not the wisest choice of handle, right?
Yeah, well, I was at Walmart, and I think it's sounding good.
I had to run to Walmart today for something. I hated it. It was empty, though, so it wasn't too bad.
Knew you were coming.
Can I just get a mic radio check here?
Yeah,
that's much better, Joe.
I think my button was in between mute and live.
Yeah, it sounded like you had you were rolled up in a rug or something.
Commander, jack me up.
Sounded like you were with the nigger bitches or something.
Hey, Bill, is that John French guy? Is he CI or not?
The name John French sounds familiar, but I don't remember where I know it from.
He was trying to debate you on the 911 with Mike and with Bob.
Oh, that's French,
Frenchman.
Frenchman's here all the time.
Yeah, he's okay. As far as I can tell. Hey, the Muslims are next door. I can hear them.
Frenchman's a little deeper into the conspiracy theory angle than a lot of us. But, yeah, he's all right. He comes on the talk show programs all the time. He's on my forum once in a while.
I got to get out of here.
Came back after all that abuse. That's
yeah, right. Yeah, you get really picked on one night.
Strength of character.
Yeah, you guys really gave him a licking, I'll tell you.
Well, when you want to enter into a debate and you're running your mouth, you better be prepared. That was my big bone with him, was that he was running his mouth, but he wasn't prepared. He had no facts.
No, I know that. No. I thought Bob Ashton was always a real nice, soft-spoken guy. Boy, Bob really let him have it with just simple questions.
Yeah, right.
I heard about it, but I didn't listen to it.
He didn't talk to any of us for a few weeks after that. He kind of fell off the face of the earth for a little bit.
Well, he got me going with it. There's nukes. That was just too much, the micro nukes in the building.
I don't buy that at all.
Well, but if you guys...
Who said that stuff? Frenchman.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know,
he's still a proponent of that. I just want to see the solid proof, you know. I don't. That's all I care about. And
what
he
about
didn't
the
have
heat
that
rays? What
hey,
about the
guys,
plasma beams?
What about the Green Lantern ring that the Jew was caught wearing? I guess most people in this forum wouldn't understand that reference.
Oh, I got it.
Hey, Bill, are you sure you didn't dock some of these photos in this God's Chosen People section?
none of those photos are doctored, believe me. None of those photos are photoshopped.
I think I might be a rare beauty amongst them.
Hey, you guys, that archive date with the Bill, Delaney, and Ashton with Frenchman is 11/24/09. On ProThink archive on TalkShoe.
ProThink or ProThink?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
ProThink. Mike, Delaney, ProThink.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
He's in around.
He's here right now. I just turned
his
mic on.
I like Mike's work.
Hello, Mike. Hello. How you doing?
I just happened to get up here in the middle of your conversation. I've been, I finally got a lawnmower, so I pushed a non-self-propelled push mower around an acre of grass today for 6.5 hours. That was fun.
Well, that'll knock the extra fat off your gut.
Yeah, exactly. it was about a foot tall, so it feels good now that it's finally cut.
Yeah, foot-tall grass is kind of rough with a non-self-propelled lawnmower, right? The old push jobs.
Those are tough.
I haven't used one of them since I was a kid.
Me too.
Somebody was asking for that Frenchman archive. I'll post it here in the chat room, the MP3 file here.
Yeah, a few guys were asking last night about that archive with me and RV Wolfpack, or whatever his name is, too.
Oh, that's not published.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was best just to hang on to that. There's some good clips in there maybe I could chop out, but yeah.
How about the best part of that was the Kool-Aid lipstick.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to grab dinner. I'll be right back. Hopefully you guys will still be up here. It won't be too long.
All right, Mike. And that's actually a true story, too. The fags in prison, they make lipstick out of purple Kool-Aid.
Oh, jeez.
Well, which is what it was a reference to.
They weren't given real purple Kool-Aid like People's Temple.
Well, I told this guy that if he met me, I would have him wearing purple Kool-Aid lipstick.
Hey, Billy, you also said you'd have him doing your laundry, too.
Yeah, that's another prison slur. Well, when you do another guy's laundry, you're usually... sleeping with them too. You're playing housewife, in other words.
Do my laundry, bitch.
Yeah. Hey.
Pilgrim's still here.
And fix me 3-pot pie.
Yes, she is. Be careful.
Hey, Bill, in the spirit of my juicing efforts, I put my juicing icon up for you.
What's that, the pile of carrots? Yeah, I still got that picture.
No, I just put it on I just put it in the TeamSpeak.
Got carrots.
Where's this at?
Wow.
I heard you talking about that about the end of the program, I guess, last week.
Probably. Yeah, we were talking about fasting, I think. I was talking about your juice fast. It's incredible.
I see it.
I'd be starving to death after about half a day.
Not carrots. Is that a health thing? The carotenoids are very antioxidant. Oh.
Yeah.
Bob, why don't you talk about your juicing real quick?
Yeah,
I
actually got very sick in 1997 of heavy metal poisoning. Ended up going through some chelation therapy. It was quite a while to figure it out, but the carrots were quite the thing. Yeah. Rather healing if you have carrot juice. Turned myself orange too. Bled orange blood.
Wow.
But I can testify that if you have enough carrots per day, you will bleed orange blood.
So the shirt just accentuates that, huh?
Yeah, but I tell you what, even though I did turn yellow and orange and my blood was orange, I really felt good. So. But I was having, I'd probably say, 75 pounds of carrots a week.
Wow. That's like 10 pounds of carrots a day.
Because it's water-based, the liver can handle it.
Oh, yeah, it detoxifies you like crazy. It's incredible. Yeah. I was really, I was really feeling good. I've kind of lost my taste for carrots right now.
Was that all you ate, actually?
No, pretty much. I was pretty much on carrots. But usually once a year, maybe once every 2 years, I do a long fast. And I do it for health reasons. It just really helps. It really makes me think clearer and
seems to help clean up my body.
I think that's part of it, yeah, because when I don't eat and I just do the carrots, I have a very, not just carrots, but a lot of green carrots. I'm very level during the whole day rather than being up and down. And, Well, you're always hungry the whole time, but you really your body should be. I haven't figured that one out yet. I think it's just because your stomach's kind of empty.
I think other part of it is not all your stuff's being addressed. All your nutrient needs aren't being addressed.
Well, I don't know what you could possibly be missing with all the juices I have.
Vitamin D? B complex vitamins, maybe?
Maybe, but there's enough dirt in there. I'm sure it'll help that out. That's a bacteria thing.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Listen, I've been taking the last 12 years powdered stuff like Ruby Reds, my greens mix, my Colony stuff from Purity Products, and New Vitality. And I was just wondering your insight or your opinion on that.
I've kind of gone to more whole food stuff, like the Barley Max that Hallelujah Acre sells, and I think Lorraine Day used to sell some of that for a while.
Yeah, Lorraine Day. Huh?
Yeah, but I used to be a big proponent of a lot of different supplements, but I'm not convinced that your body really absorbs that. My mineral content in my hair analysis didn't come up until after I started the juicing process. So when I started a raw juicing, it seems like that was able to assimilate the minerals in my body better than else. So if you're taking whole foods, like or even whole food quote supplement type stuff like the Barley Max, which is dehydrated, I think you have a better chance of
absorption.
Yeah, it's an absorption issue.
A lot of that stuff that's in those pill forms, your body, it basically it can't absorb it at all.
Yeah, there was a guy that was telling me that he had a project, a student project for probably high school or something, where he took the minerals or the vitamin pills and smashed them up and threw them in the soil. Plants grew like crazy. So I think that's the purpose of the plants, is to absorb that stuff, not us. We need plants that absorb stuff in the soil.
And chelate it so we can use it.
Exactly.
I haven't
even had success with the chelated minerals.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
I had heard years ago that the pressed vitamins that you usually get in the bottles, they're so pressed tightly that 95% of the pills just come out with the feces and they don't even get absorbed, whereas the liquid vitamins get 95% absorption. So if you're taking these pills in the bottles, that you don't get your money's worth.
Yeah, that's probably correct. The other thing I did, too, that I found wasn't very useful was the liquid minerals. I'm not convinced that does much of anything except give your body excessive pills.
It's a shame Clifton can't come on right now, because I think he had some sort of liquid mineral or maybe it was liquid vitamin regimen when he had a problem 10 years ago, and he said it helped him.
Yeah, he did he even did some silver. I remember.
Now,
silver's
a real good antibiotic, but you don't want to get too much of it.
Yeah, it's okay to be orange, but being gray is pretty bad.
Well, that's if you continually take silver.
Yeah. What if you want to join the Blue Man Group?
I almost think that was somewhat of a little bit of propaganda to keep people away from natural antibiotics. Yeah, because silver really is a very good antibiotic. It's also good for eye infections. You can just throw this liquid silver in your eyes if you have an eye infection. They used to use that when babies were born, but now they've got...
Yeah, silver nitrate.
Yep.
Yeah, for syphilis.
Yeah. Yes, and also to prevent eye infections, it was a big problem, birth and eye infections, and loss of sight.
Hey, Bob, what about whole food liquids like Monave and these other foods you buy, like you buy them through people that are selling them?
You know, I don't know much about most of the stuff except for the low-temperature dehydrated type of whole food. The other stuff I kind of left behind.
I had a guy trying to sell me Zango.
Yeah, there were a few things that people were selling me that were actually just disgusting. That were one of them looked like baby turds, and I don't know. It was really disgusting.
Yeah, you ever hear the joke about the guy that had the farm? Had the rabbit farm. And he didn't know what to do with all the rabbit pellets, so he put them in little bags, sold them as smart pills. And the guy stopped. He says, only a dollar for the smart pills. And the guy took one, and he said, that tastes like, you know. And he says, you're getting smarter already. Bad joke.
Yeah, that sounds pretty bad.
Getting smarter already.
I think if I really think about the whole the juicing process, it is a good way of letting your body obtain its mineral content without the digestive system working.
Yeah,
and that's why. Yeah, that's why I kind of like it for fasting. Now, some people do some brutal fast, like just a liquid fast, meaning just a water fast or something like that. I find those type of very difficult because your body just starts dumping all the garbage in it very quickly. That's kind of painful.
Hey, Bob, what kind of juicer would you recommend to buy, to purchase?
My favorite juicer is the Champion 2000. And they're for new. They're probably about $220. I've picked a brand new one up out of a magazine in California for $40. Someone used it once, didn't like juicing. But it's there's two. There's more of a commercial one. There's one that's got stainless steel shaft and one that's not. And then I had a Green Star juicer, which I still do have, and that actually smashes vegetables. But it's a lot more difficult to clean. So I almost completely stick to my Champion 2000. And the reason I don't go with the typical force-type juicers, the high RPM ones, is because you can't keep the juice. I've got it down to a science where I can actually juice, and the juice will last for 4 days if I seal the bottles up good. I use like Pellegrino bottles or Gerolstein bottles, anything that I can seal really well and get as much air out as possible. So I fill them to the top, get the air out, and then I cool them quickly, keep the juice for a while. But it took me years to get my little science down to where it lasts.
Hey, Bob, here's a question for you. How much were you spending a month on vegetables?
Lots.
Because I tried, and that was the problem I found, is it's very expensive to juice.
Well, it's not so bad with just carrots. Like, if I'll go to Costco, I can pick up bags of carrots in a pretty inexpensive way. But when the other stuff I do, like cucumbers and spinach and celery, you can just kind of see that in the background. I do a lot of that seasonal, go to the farmer's markets, and I go for all organic. That can get pretty expensive.
Yeah,
some of my 16-ounce bottles of juicing or juice was probably worth $4 or $5 a piece, and that didn't include my labor.
Right, and that's the thing I think people don't understand when they see and read about juicing, because when I watch some of those infomercials, I look at that table full of vegetables, and I'm thinking, that's a couple $100 in vegetables right there. And most people, I think, seem to realize that it's very expensive. If, like you say, if you try to juice all different types of vegetables, if you stick to the cheaper ones like carrots, you probably can do that. But everything is just too expensive.
It's not expensive if the juice is a meal. Right?
I mean,
I would spend $10 on myself at Wendy's or something. I'm just throwing a number out there, right? I mean, $8-$10 for a meal at Wendy's.
Well, when
when
you visited me last time and I was doing that juicing fast, my food bill still didn't go down because I was juicing everything in sight. You know, from pineapples to carrots to spinach, celery, and even coconuts. I'll pop coconuts open and have the coconut juice. Actually, but if you want to go the cheapest way, you can go to Costco or BJ's and pick up organic carrots. They sell them in, I think they're 10-pound bags, and that's really good in itself. I improved my eyesight dramatically just doing carrots. I got to get back to carrots again because my eyes are going south now.
Well, Bob, can I ask you also, do you follow the biblical food laws?
Yeah, pretty much most of the time. In Germany, I was a little bit more difficult. It seems like the Germans love to eat sausages all the time. So sometimes I didn't know what I was getting. But it is. I believe it's a very good idea. I don't think you're going to go to hell if you eat the wrong stuff. But.
No, I think for health wise, I think there's benefits to not eating pork and the seafoods. I mean, a certain shellfish.
Oh, absolutely. I don't have any trouble avoiding the shellfish at all. But sometimes I don't. You don't know that there's some pork in something.
Well, that's why I was curious, just amongst us people in here, I was wondering how many of us have given up pork and shellfish.
Well, the surprise to me was swordfish. I think Bill and I were talking one day. I've eaten a bunch of swordfish in my life, and I had no idea that was a forbidden.
When I was young, I loved grilled swordfish. I ain't had none now, though. I mean, it's they have no scales.
Yeah, I didn't eat it anymore either, but it's something that I did enjoy.
What about the flounder? Is that clean or unclean?
Flounder has fins and scales.
Okay, I wasn't sure because the way it looks, it kind of looks like
fish. Flounder are bottom layers, but they're not bottom feeders.
You know what I wonder about is chicken. The Jews are pushing chicken left and right. I kind of wonder whether this really is.
Well, I tend to think that it's clean. And I eat a ton of it, believe me. But, chicken, I think it's impossible to correctly translate all the names of those birds in the Old Testament. There's a lot of contention. But chicken aren't really scavengers, and they aren't, birds of prey. They don't really dead animals. I know they eat worms and slugs and things like that and insects. But they don't, and they don't have webbed feet.
Well, I would wonder, what would a pheasant or a quail or a turkey, what would they eat? Would they eat worms and grubs? Because I would picture a chicken left on its own would eat basically like those birds.
Well, probably, and I think that they're all fair game.
Right.
The vultures, the ospreys, the eagles, ducks are not clean, and geese are not clean.
Hey, well, you notice that they're pushing those Angus burgers through all the fast food joints, and it happens to be partly, I think, because of the mad cow disease that they don't hardly ever test for anymore.
Yeah, I don't eat burgers at fast food joints at all.
Well, I actually avoid chicken because I got sick with it so much. I don't know. It must have been the processing, but my food poisoning days have gone down to almost zero since I kicked the chicken habit. I never liked it that much anyhow.
Bob, do you give up dairy?
Oh, I don't do dairy at all.
I've given up milk. I still eat yogurt, but milk I've given up.
I'll do milk if it's right out of the cow. That's it.
Yeah, but where do you find milk right out of the cow? And I do a lot of dairy.
I go to Amish country if I want it.
Yeah, right. That's a different. I wish there were some Amish farmers around here.
Yeah, that becomes the problem. Is trying to find it nearby.
Yeah, I found it in California too. It's actually legal to sell. Somebody,
John. John, terrible feedback, John.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
Yes, I found that some states do sell raw milk. California happens to be one of them. You can pick it up in the stores. But Pennsylvania, it's illegal.
I'm sure it's illegal in New York, too. I get milk from a farm that's not homogenized, but I would think it's probably pasteurized.
Yeah, that's the first thing that happened before homogenization was the pasteurization, which it kills the enzymes in the milk, which makes it undigestible for me. I think you said your son has the same problem, Bill.
Yes, he does. Yes. My son cannot drink milk.
Well,
I'd like to see if he could drink raw milk, too. I'm sure he probably could.
I have absolutely no trouble with raw milk. I can drink gallons of it. So sometimes I go up there, and every once in a while I get a craving for milk. I'll go get a gallon of it. I can go through the gallon with no trouble, but I can't do ice cream or homogenized milk. Cream I don't have as much trouble with. I guess it's just mostly fat.
Well, there's a farmer right down the road. He's already. I'm trying to get on his good side, right? He's a real good guy, and I talk to him whenever I can, and I'm going to. As soon as I feel comfortable, I'm going to try to breach the raw milk topic with him. He has about 20 dairy cows, and he has about 4 steer, from what I count.
Yeah, that's something. You know, I would, if people are interested in getting, I know some people are just vegetarians or whatever, but I've done some or gotten some meat from the 4-H. The 4-H is actually a pretty good source for unantibiotic animals. I bought a black Angus steer about 3, maybe 4 years ago, and I bought it with another family, and we split it right down the center, ended up with probably 600 pounds of meat from that steer. I can't remember, the thing was like over 2,000 pounds, and so we each ended up with about 600 pounds of meat. Took a long time to eat all that.
I could imagine. I'm going to, he does slaughter some animals too for sale, and I'm going to ask him about that too.
Well, you know, the house I just got here, there's a, the guy just begged me, you know, he came flying up here, was all worried, and he said, I understand you bought the house, you know, your property you're on there is, I got 3 trophy deer last year, so you know, he's wanting to know if he could do crossbow hunting on my property, and I said, fine, give me a little piece of meat.
Yeah, right, you leave a rump right there on the doorstep, though.
So I think there's nothing like if you're gonna have a meat, it's better to get it out of the processing, get it directly from the source. Actually, went a whole year without any meat at all, no meat, no dairy products, no fish.
You know, just for the hell of it, I just threw in a raw milk into a browser, and Gilbertsville is a town about 20 miles from me. I got cousins that live there, and they have a farm that sells raw milk. Imagine that. I'm going to check it out.
There you go.
I never tried to look online. I never imagined that they'd still have it. But in New York, evidently, they could sell raw milk. Butternut Farms, Gilbertsville, New York. There's a Butternut River that runs through there that it's probably named for, right?
Yeah, if for some reason you can't do it in Pennsylvania, you got to kind of go up there and say, hey, you mind if I have some of your whatever this stuff is here?
Hey, Bob. How long will the raw milk keep? There's a little farmer's market just down the street that I can get all the raw milk I want, but I don't know how long it'll keep.
You know, I don't know. I kind of drank it in a few days.
It keeps longer than store milk.
Put the link in there. The dates on the store milk around here are usually 2-3 weeks out.
You know, I'm kind of curious. I would love to talk to other people about the vegetarian thing. I did try that for a year where I was totally on vegetables and no meat at all for a whole year. And I'd have to say my energy level was not nearly as good as having meat every once in a while.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, beef is just 100% processed vegetable.
I suppose you could look at it that way, especially if the meat's from your backyard.
Well, this farmer down the road, I'm going to try to get some beef off him this fall because he grass raises all his beef. No antibiotics or anything, no hormones, and he grass feeds.
That's another thing I try to do too. I don't know how many people do that, but I try to go for local farmers, even if it costs more. Try to get keep it local. I have a feeling we're going to. It's a little scary the way things are going to where. Everything's, all the produce is coming from outside of the country now.
Right, it's crazy. I planted a big garden this year. I hope I have more luck with it than last year.
Yeah, my garden was eaten by deer and this gigantic groundhog. I mean, this thing must have had a party. It was so big and fat, it looked like a I don't even know how to describe it. It was just big. It ate all my cucumbers. Ate the whole damn crop.
Well, I have my garden fenced off. I put up fences last year. But last year, the blight got it. So I don't know about this year. I hope that it does better than last.
I absolutely have to do something like that. The deer and the groundhogs. And
I had 16 tomato plants last year, and I got 2 tomatoes, and we got maybe 3-4 peppers, I think, out of 18 plants. It was a shame.
Bill, do you have a family there that's also eating, or is it just you and with this garden?
No, I have a mother and grandmother here with me.
And do they can the stuff?
Yes, my mother cans up tons of stuff. She canned, even though we lost most of our tomatoes last year and most of our peppers, we had a lot of beets and carrots and red cabbage, and she canned all that.
Now, how do you think you would do if it was just you by yourself?
Well, I would have to learn to can, right?
Well, what I'm implying is it becomes easier. You do really need to have a few people to really make it work, I mean, efficiently. If you're by yourself, it's just hard to do it all.
Well, yeah, it's more work. I mean, my mother's pretty handy with a canner, but it's nothing I couldn't learn how to do. Yeah, you know, when the time comes that I have to can, I mean, she's 72. It's inevitable that time will come soon. And I'll just learn to can. I mean, I know how to can now from watching her. And she has most of the stuff written down, so I'm sure it's something I could pick up. She has a pressure cooker for things that don't have high acid content that she has to can in a pressure cooker. And then things with a high acid content, like fruit jams and things like that, you don't need a pressure cooker. But she has a couple of shelves of canned food in the basement here. Jams and green beans and carrots and sliced beets and pickles and things like that.
Now here's a question for you, Bob. When people can, does the heating process, would that be like pasteurization? Well, it is. And are you destroying any of the nutrients then?
I think the enzymes are actually more important than the nutrient content. So once you cook the food, you're destroying the enzymes, so it's not as easy to assimilate for your body. Although, I don't know what you do in the wintertime. I mean, got to eat something.
Right, you have to preserve your food some way. And we freeze a good portion of it, and we can a good portion of it.
Well, sometimes I try to imagine, what did people in 1700s, what would be their pretty much staple diet that they would eat throughout the winter? Because, I mean, I think in our culture, the way we live now, we can have access to anything. But I'm sure there they must only eat, you know, maybe 2, 3, or 4 things throughout the whole winter.
Yeah, I don't think there was a lot of variety.
No, but grain will last a long time.
Absolutely.
Some fruits, yeah, you know, I used to, when I was with my wife before I went to prison, I had a garage that was it was never reached, it was attached to the house, it never reached freezing, and it never got too warm. Yeah, you know, the temperature of the garage, it was in Jersey, so it was a lot further south than here. But in the winter, it stayed right around 30 degrees, 35 degrees all winter, 40 degrees sometimes, if it was warm out. And it was ideal for keeping squashes and apples and pumpkins and things like that. And we would go to the farmers markets in October and November, and we would load up on apples and squashes and pumpkins when it was the cheapest that you could buy it. And I'd have apples that I bought in late October, bags of apples in late October and early November, and I'd still have them in February and early March, and I'd still be baking. I used to bake apple pies. It was one of my pastimes. And they keep for 4 months sometimes, no problem. John, that's terrible. I'm sorry. Flag me when you can fix it. Yeah, and our forebears here smoked a lot of food, which is a great way to preserve meat and fish.
Well, it was funny. When I was cooking my dinner tonight, I made, you know, some rice. I boiled some water, and I started thinking back 200 years ago, just to cook something would mean you have to go light a fire, and you either have a fire constantly burning the whole time, or I'm thinking, you know, you better have something that was prepared and, you know, just eat that, because I'm thinking it would have been so much trouble to make something like rice.
Well, just imagine when this whole system starts falling apart and you don't have access to any of this stuff anymore. I keep thinking about that every day.
Right. That's
right.
What I was thinking about myself. If it just ended, how many people would just... It would be such a shock. It would.
Well, that's also another reason I thought it was an interesting thing to do with the fasting, is I wanted to see what would happen. You know, I'm really the only person I can experiment on. So when I first did it, the first thing you're thinking, well, you're going to die if you don't take vitamins or something's going to happen. But it really isn't that bad. It's just, I think that with a lot of people, it's just the fear of doing it or the fact that, hey, I really like food and I can't stop. But once you start, it's just a discipline. It's easier for me not to eat at all than to try to, quote, diet. Forget that. I have no willpower to do that. I'm either eating or I'm not eating at all.
And how's your weight?
Well, right now?
Yeah, right now.
I'm probably 186 foot, maybe 185. I don't know, somewhere around that. I lose about a half a pound a day when I juice fast. If you don't eat, if you don't have the juice, you'll lose a pound a day. But it's all fat that comes off. It's not really, there's no muscle that comes. When you fast with water, you lose muscle too.
But it sounds overall that you're eating pretty healthy the whole time. Because it sounds like your weight's constantly maintained at that level.
I go between about 190 and 170 in a year, and that's because of the fasting. That's about where I stay. If I didn't fast, I can imagine going over 200.
And how long do the fast last?
I do it for 4 days, which is 6 weeks. 6 weeks. And typically I do it during Lent. I just tell people I'm a really religious person. Because a lot of people ask questions. Why are you doing that? You know, they can't. They just don't get it. It's just me. I do it because I want to do it. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else or anything religious.
Well, I definitely think it's a way. I think that was part of in the Bible, what it was doing was, and I mean, it doesn't explain it, but I do think it allows your body to detoxify when you give it a rest from food.
I would say some people, they don't need to do that for whatever reason. I kind of do. I mean, I can see it going either way. Some people seem to be healthy no matter what they eat.
Well, I know I'm kind of like you. I sometimes experiment on myself, and I remember, you know, you're reading the Bible. God said about work 6 days, take a rest. So there was a period of time where I would eat. I got on the schedule. I mean, I would eat 6 days, and then for one day, just for 24 hours, I wouldn't. I would drink water, but no food, and I kind of just gave my body rest, see how that was. And, nothing great happened or nothing bad happened.
I know quite a few people who do that once a week. Once you get, it's kind of like the CI community. Once you go into that, the fasting, there's like a fasting community or a health community, you know. See a lot of people that do different stuff like that. Don't eat one day per week. You know, another thing I did besides just eating vegetables for a whole year, I had basically only meat for a whole year. You want to feel like crap, do that. Surprised I didn't get gout.
Well, what would the Eskimos, if I'm kind of picturing that's how they would, their diet would be maybe, I'm thinking, or if you lived way up north, and they might just, or they only eat fish, because I'm not imagining them having a lot of vegetables to choose from also. Maybe
right, a lot of the Scandinavian nations, that fish is their staple, and a lot of the times it's all they had to eat.
Hey, speaking about fish, I got some great fish. I don't know what kind of fish it was, but on this last trip that I went to, this boat trip above Sicily, there was a fisherman going by, and I snagged him, and I got about probably about 9 pounds of fish, and the five of us had a big fish meal on the boat. Delicious.
I'm really wary about fish now. The fish stores are pushing all the fish made and grown in China on farms, and it's crazy.
Well, I know where this came from. This came right off the side of the islands, one of the islands. So.
Well, one thing I've noticed is I eat a lot of nuts, and I tend to buy the Planters. It seems like they're good, but in a lot of these, the cheaper brands, I've noticed they're always packaged in Vietnam. And I've had cases where the peanuts or whatever nut you're eating will have, it almost tastes like a fuel oil is in it. And so I always try to tell people, be a little wary about, you know, if you're trying to save a dollar or two, I would recommend go for the more premium ones. The quality always seems better, if at least with Planters.
Well, I would strongly urge that none of us eat anything made in China, Vietnam, or Korea.
Yeah, I don't trust the Chinese at all.
I wouldn't trust any of them.
Right, I try to always look at the label, and I won't buy it if I see it's made in China, or I won't consume it if it's made in China.
Well, if you get ceramics from China, make sure you have a Geiger counter. They've been passing off radioactive ceramic, like coffee mugs and stuff.
They'll put any kind of garbage they could possibly put into your food to screw you. That's what they'll do to us.
Well, look,
it's crazy buying food from people that want to destroy us.
We were talking about the sheetrock the other day, which is some of the simplest stuff to make, and I was always wondering why they couldn't make it in the U.S., and there was a big scandal with Chinese sheetrock that had acidic materials in it and was eating up people's houses. They had to strip it all out. There, the Germans, most of the manufacturers are dropping the Chinese like crazy because they're putting out inferior quality products.
Any kind of garbage they can screw you with. That's what they are. They're thieves.
Yeah.
They sell dog food here. 40-pound bags of dog food. I wouldn't buy it for my dog. No way. And they want $12 a bag. It's less than half the price of the dog food I'm getting. But it's made in China. And it's not Walmart that's selling it. It's Tractor Supply that's selling it. And they're just as bad as Walmart. I went up and down the pet sections in Tractor Supply. Now, a lot of people rely on this place for their farm animals. Well, their dog section had nothing but stuff made in China. Everything they had was made in China. The chew toys, the dog biscuits, the whole, everything there was made in China. It was crazy. And I don't know how they make any money at all shipping 40-pound bags of $12 dog food over here. That $12 is eaten up just in the shipping costs. How could they possibly make money on that?
Because that's not the objective. The objective is to destroy the United States.
Exactly.
They don't give a crap what they bring over here.
Exactly.
Because you know damn well they could make all of this stuff in the States for the same price, and now they're shipping it all over the place. It's just the movement of the cash. It's this Jewish empire right now, the empire of the merchants.
Exactly.
Drives me nuts to even think about it, and there's not a whole lot you can do because they control the whole damn money supply.
And that's the frustration I feel. It's you can't fight the system. You're just stuck in it. And I'm sure everybody else feels that same way.
Yep, you end up paying your taxes to the Jew.
Well, here's a question for you then, is from the comment you made. Do you think so much it's destroying our people or destroying our country that is their ultimate objective?
Well, I think the country originally represented the white nations, and Chinese have made no bones in the past. It certainly doesn't end up on the radio or anything about wanting to destroy the U.S. And of course, the objective is the whites.
I brought this up other times. I always think if they ultimately destroyed all the whites, then the other people will not be able to support them like we do. Do you agree with that or disagree?
I agree, but the problem is we have defectors in our own group, and that's the majority now. You have these complete idiots going to countries and bringing back foreigners and being friendly to foreigners. Their objective should be to gather the lost sheep of Israel. They're gathering everything but that.
Well, what he's talking about is that, you know, the Jews are so arrogant as to think that they could get rid of us and still have a society.
Yeah, but that's always been a problem. Every single country they've gone into, and they've gathered enough of their own kind, which is the Canaanites or the beasts of the field, it doesn't. The end result is the destruction of that civilization, and then the whites run to another place. But there's nowhere to run now. This is pretty much the last stand.
Yes, it is.
But sometimes I try to imagine in my mind, say every white is out of this world now. I think their world would just be a very primitive place.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Without the whites to keep them going, it would all end. But I don't believe that we're supposed to be part of the... the more I look at this, the whites are exactly what the Bible says we are. We're sheep. And all these other people are simply taking advantage of us. And it always ends up getting twisted so that we look like, they make us look like the enemy. Then we go into this guilt thing and we start taking care of our enemy. And not only are they our enemy, but they're the enemy of God. And they don't belong with us.
Well, absolutely not. Kent, I'm getting some feedback from you. Maybe if you make
That's impossible. I had my mic shut off.
No, you didn't. Honest.
Well, I got the same thing as you, the same kind as you, with a little switch on the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had the thing switched off.
I don't know how. I swore it was your light lighting up. I could be wrong, but.
No, I believe you. But you sound like you're still stumbling through a garage with the lights off or something.
I'm sorry. I'm sitting in a chair on a cement floor. Every time I move, it makes noise. My light's not on, though. When I shift in my chair, though, it does make some noise. It does.
Maybe it's something about the wire.
Watch. Like that?
Oh, yeah, you captured it right there.
Yeah, I moved my chair. I sat up in my chair. That's all I did, I swear.
Wow.
It's a regular, like, an office chair, like you'd buy in Staples. It's probably made in China, right? And I'm on a cement floor, which makes it noisy.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How do I sound now? Yeah.
No, that's fine, Kaiser. I haven't had any feedback from you in a while. Any of that loud noise in a while, so.
You know, I have a
feeling. Okay, so it's fine now?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's up, Bob?
I have a theory that the next thing they're going to start shipping over is cement.
Yeah, that there's no way that could ever be affordable, right? That's just incredible.
If we see that coming over, we know that it's totally ridiculous.
Yes.
Because it's so cheap per ton.
Hey, Bill?
Yes, Mike. Yes.
Got a quick question. I was listening to you, Bob, and you guys talking about if the white race was destroyed, so to speak, in the age to come. I was listening to one of your tapes. You talked about the latter rain, the former rain, and the latter rain of Joel. Do you think that in the near future, that in the age to come, that God will restore us back to where we'll be, you know, I guess pure or pure before Him like we used to be?
Well, our entire race is going to be restored. I mean, that's the promise of Scripture. And when that happens, there won't be anybody else. There will be no tares. There will be no goats. That's the promise of Scripture. That's the Christian hope.
Who are the dogs outside of the city, Bill?
I believe that they are absolutely unrepentant Adamites.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I always thought they could be other races or Vamsers or something.
But they're all destroyed.
Yeah, you're right. The tares are all destroyed. The goats are all destroyed. So how could they be outside the city?
I have no other... No other explanation for that. Yeah, you know, the wicked servant wasn't wicked racially. He took his coin and he hid it in the ground, right? So he was cast into the outer darkness. And to me, that means that he would be one of those people outside the walls of the city.
I've got a different view on that particular parable. I haven't got it right here, but I did a study in it, different Bibles and things, and it kind of works out to where the owner of the property there was a nasty kind of a guy, and he tricked some people out of some property far away, and he went over there to claim it, and he gave his various servants a certain amount of money to be able to go over and put it into the marketplace or to get interest on it and things. In fact, that even says that and when he comes back. But this one man hid it in the ground, and when they came back, well, he took each of his servants and said, how did you do? And each one said how he made so much more money off of it. So the landlord or the master or whatever he was named, he had gave each one a certain amount of more of money or property or authority. But the one that hid it under the ground said, here's your money back. I didn't do anything with it because I knew you were a nasty man, and all you wanted us to do is put it at usury, and that's against God's laws. Now, it's not what it says, but it says it close enough to that. And so he didn't want to put it to usury. He wanted to just give him back the same amount of money that he gave him in the first place. And that's when he said he's going to throw him out. But I find out by looking at that parable and this view that it's an honor for an honest man to be cast out of a den of thieves.
Well, that's one way to look at it, but I don't see the language. I don't see the that word nasty in language, harsh or austere, does not intone wickedness.
I'd have to. That's one of the parables that I want to work up. I probably have it like half done or a third done, and I haven't touched it for a long time. But that's my impression of that, is that he didn't want to put it to usury.
Well, Christ ends the parable with, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Yeah. But who's weeping and who's gnashing? The people that are loaning money at interest and usury?
Well, you know, usury is contrary to the Old Testament. It is one of the laws. We are not to loan money to each other at usury, but we are permitted to loan money to strangers at usury. And usury was a fact of life in the Greco-Roman Empire.
Yeah, I don't think the parable is real specific on who he should have or loaned it to, or who the other servants had loaned their money to.
Well, he said it is specific. He said he could have given it to the bankers to loan out at usury. So the sin is on the bankers more as much as it is on the servant.
Actually, the way the system is set up today, it's. I don't even know if you call it usury. If you don't put your money in some place that earns you, quote, interest, I don't even consider it interest, you're not even going to keep up with the Jews inflating the currency.
Yeah.
So you're kind of in a bind. I mean, basically, you put it under your pillow, 10 years from now, it's going to be worth half. So either put it to get it. Really, what you want to do is get it out of that. It's not really a commodity anymore. You want to, whatever you can possibly save, you want to get it out of that into something that's usable for you or for the flock at some point.
Well, you know, I was talking about it a couple of weeks ago. I managed to save up about $1,200 last year, and I have it in a savings account. It's still in the savings account, and I get about 30 cents a month in interest on it. That's absolutely. I gotta have some money put away just in case something happens, right? I mean, I'm driving a 93 Ford. It might need a tire one day or whatever, or a tranny or something. I got to have some money put away. So I don't spend any money, and I put away what I can. And I got $1,200, and it collected 30 cents in interest. I don't believe that for a month. If I had $1,200 that I owed on a credit card, I would probably be paying $40 in interest.
Oh, at least. It doesn't work both ways at all.
Right, it's absolutely incredible the way the Jews got this economy rigged up.
Oh yeah, you got to be a very sophisticated type of trader now to even capture any kind of income from this.
Well, yeah, but I don't want to tie it up in a CD. I'm not really going to put it. I'm not going to put it in any gambling venture, right? Because it's incredible. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I almost think to some extent the stock market is the biggest casino of them all.
Well, it is. It exactly is. It's nothing but gambling.
Of the parable of the wicked servant, years ago, Pastor Emery said that the bad servant was calling him a thief, kind of, and then he said, because he said that, then the master said, if you think I'm a thief, then why didn't you put my money out to usury? That's how he kind of explained that idea.
Did he say thief or harsh master?
Well, the word doesn't intone thief, and I stand by my translation in the CNT. It's literally translated, and I think that we have to understand the literal translation of the parable and not read things into it.
What is the literal translation? Did he say austere man and hard and austere?
I have to find the parable and look at the Greek and look at my translation.
Hey, Bill, I got it right here on Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verses 23 through, like, 29.
Speak, O wise one.
And it says, then coming forth also, he who received one talent said, Master, I know you. You are a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered. I'm going to stop right there and just, I agree with Sheldon Emery on the way he interpreted this. Because Jesus is telling him, you know, that's what he thought about his master. That didn't mean that was the way the master was. And being in fear,
exactly.
Having departed, I hid your talent in the earth. Behold, have that which is yours. But replying, his master said to him, wicked and timid servant, slave, you knew that I reap from where I have not sown, and I gather from where I have not scattered. Therefore, it was necessary for you to deposit my silver with the bankers, and coming, I would have received that which is mine with interest. And what I think, my conjecture is this. The master, knowing the way this servant felt about his master, the master is basically exposing the way the servant was. And that's why he said, if that's the way you think about me, you should have at least, you know, given it to the bankers.
Well, didn't he admit, though, right there, that he said, you knew that I had done all these things that you accused me of? So, which in effect is a confession or an admission that he really was a man who went out there and cheated and stole stuff from people.
Well, that doesn't intone, first, reaping where I have not sowed. In other words, you're my servant, you're going to do the sowing, but I'm going to keep the profit. That's what that means, and that's the actual that's the typical wage slave relationship. That's the typical wage slave relationship that we've all lived in. That doesn't make the man a thief. The man's not a thief. He's not.
The servant wouldn't say that. I mean, it's obvious, you know, the servant does the actual reaping and sowing, but you know, the master doesn't do the reaping. The servant does the reaping.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, the servant said, I know that you reap where you have not sown. And you're talking about it literally, and I'm saying, let's take it literally then. If the master's not actually reaping, is he? He just gets the money after the crop is sold.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's profiting from the planting and the harvesting of the crop.
My view of it was that the master here was...
But that doesn't make him a thief.
In the business... He's in the business of going out there and cheating people out of their properties and not really working. Even if he had the farm, he was paying these people to do the work. But the implication of what I've seen in only the Bibles I have available here and the commentaries is that he went somewhere after being cunning and deceitful and got some property by deceitful means.
But we don't have any Greek. There's no Greek word there that indicates theft or deceit.
Except that the servant said, Master, I know that you reap where you have not sown.
And
he's
then
not
the
talking
master
about
says,
the
you
work,
know that I've been
you
doing
know, the
this.
Work relationship. He's not talking about that.
And then the master admits, you know that I do these things.
Well, or else you say, or you know, in your mind you know that.
Well, as it was read there, it said that you know that I do these things, so it implies
right.
that the man
words,
was
that's
exactly
what you know.
As. And also, if the servant was an Israelite, he would know better than to bear false witness without a without someone else backing him up, making him
speak
the truth.
Oh, come on. How many Israelites in history have borne false witness without somebody backing them up?
Well, we're talking scripture, the parable here.
Oh, so that makes him a better, that means that nobody, the parable doesn't reflect reality? I mean, we've been lying all our generations.
Well, that's not the point. The point is, if he's going to not put it out at usury because of the laws of Israel, then we could imply that he would not accuse his master of being an evil man or a thief or something like that, unless he has some basis for it.
I think he's just using his master of being an austere man. The Greek word is skleros. It just means hard, but it does not intone a thief or a cheat at all.
All right, we can get beyond that. But then he goes on to say that you reap where you do not sow.
Right, and so that means he profits where he didn't actually work.
Yeah.
That's what it means to me.
Well, so it can mean that, but in this context, why would the servant be saying that to the master? Because they all know the work relationship. I mean, what is, you know, everybody knows.
Yeah, you know, I've loaded trucks for a living. Yeah, you know, and I've seen shipping docks and receiving docks full of union workers that loaded trucks for a living. And they were all jealous and envious of the people that sat in the offices and wore the suits. And it's just the way it is, even though they understand they were hired to load trucks.
Okay. But then the master says, okay, if you think that's what I do, then why didn't you put it out to usury? So explain that.
But replying, his master said to him, wicked and timid slave, you knew that I reap from where I have not sown, and I gather from where I have not scattered. Therefore, it was necessary for you to deposit my silver with the bankers, and coming, I would have received that which is mine with interest. In other words, he would have reaped, he would have, what he, if the servant believes that what he typically does is make money on his money and reap where he didn't sow, yeah, you know, make money without working for it, then the servant should have known better to put the money in the bank and collect the interest on it. That's what he's telling
exactly.
him. But that doesn't make the master evil. It means that the servant should have known better to take what he was given and make some profit on it. A servant should have known better to do that.
But if he's a strict,
the fault is with the servant.
If he's strict on his own, the servant is strict on his interpretation of the law, and he does not want to participate
in usury. It's a parable. It's not an interpretation of the law, Ron. It's a parable, and Christ talked, whenever Christ talked, his talk was framed in the society in which he existed. That this, you know, if we want to talk about interpretations of the law, well, we could have a lot of problems with all the parables. We're not talking about the law.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I mean, the servant is the wicked one, not the master. But I'm saying that the servant is implying that the master is no good.
Well, that's really obvious when he says it that way, yes.
Well, that could, you know, that reflects the typical, that the servant is no good because he is rebelling against his station in life. He's mad at the master because the master is the master. That's the way I see it.
You're coming around.
Well, that's the way I see it. I haven't changed my position. I
feel like you're
much
closer to me.
It's the typical disgruntled employee. Yeah, you know, you're a plumber, and I could work for you for 2 weeks, and I could agree to work for you for, say, $500 a week, right? And then you take me on a plumbing job, and I work, and I earn my $500 a week, but I see that you made $20,000 at the end of the two-week plumbing job. So now I look at my $1,000 and your $20,000, and I'm disgruntled. Even though I made a bargain with you, I'm upset because you profited $20,000. You know what I mean? And then I've seen that over and over again in the workplace. Where workers are...
I get that, but I'm not seeing where that connects with the servant that buried money in the ground.
Well, what he's saying, the master's... Yeah, you know, he's kind of like... I think it shows envy Yeah, you know, oh, he sows where he doesn't, he reaps where he doesn't sow, and he harvests, he profits where he didn't work, in other words. It's an envy that the servant has for the master.
So hey, the servant decided to commit suicide, basically, by the master's money?
Yeah, you know, I know you're a hard man. I think maybe he was afraid to lose it, in other words.
Yeah, hey, Bill? What he just said, as I'm reading this, and it says, but replying his master, the master replies, wicked and timid slave, you knew. In other words, the master knew the slave's perception of the master. And I'm thinking the master simply exposed the perception of the slave towards his master. So the master treated him the way the slave perceived his master to be.
Well, right, that he knew better. Since he knew better, he should have went and put it in the bank and collected interest on it.
Yeah, because
instead he hit it
in
the ground.
Yeah, because it says in verse 25.
He calls him a wicked and timid slave, which indicates to me that the slave was afraid to lose what he was given.
So are you saying that actually it would have been okay for the slave to put the money in the bank as an interest-bearing note or whatever?
Right. That was the norm of society at the time.
I'm not buying that.
Well that you know, the coins reflect the word here. That's what they mean. That's what they reflect to me. And the master doesn't want you taking your word and burying it in the ground. Taking the gospel and burying it in the ground. That's what this means to me.
Right.
I could see that just that statement alone, we shouldn't take the word of God and bury it in silence, in other words, and not speaking of it. But I don't see how that would relate to the
because Christ is telling a parable. He's using himself as the typical estate owner of the time, and he's telling it in the context of the culture at the time. And it just happened to be a culture just like ours is today. It has nothing to do with the Hebrew law. It has everything to do with...
Well, it ought to, because now it's giving fuel to everyone who thinks the law is thrown down the toilet.
Well, that's because they're idiots and they can't read. This has everything to do with Christ making an allegory from the current model of culture as it is at that time.
But if he wanted to make that point...
I do not buy that Christ is going to bring out something like that, which he knows would be a problem later on. Well, what's the point of that?
Well, what do you mean, what's the point? The point of it is that it's a parable. It represents things. It's not to be taken literally.
He didn't have to raise up the idea of sending out and putting it to usury, though.
Yeah, you know, if you want to take the parables literally, don't weed your garden. Don't weed the garden again. Have every farmer in the country that's a Christian better not be weeding his garden.
What are you talking about?
I don't think he was taking it literally.
If you want to take the parables literally, don't get caught weeding your garden. Because you might rip the tares up. You might rip up some wheat with them.
Oh.
I didn't connect that.
Don't weed your garden.
But weeding the garden, I don't understand that.
Well, you want to take the parable literally. Christ isn't talking about the law. He's talking to people. He's making an illustration, and he's drawing on the society at the time.
I'm going to stick with the illustration. Thief idea.
I myself would stick with the idea that the usury part has something to do with that parable. And it's not just mentioned for nothing, that it has something to do with the parable. Right.
You don't want to be the servant to take your coin, that takes his coin and hides it in the ground.
No, I think you don't want to be the servant, period, of that kind of a man.
Why?
Well,
we're all servants. We're all supposed to be servants.
Well, that's true, but we're not the servants like this guy who labors in a field and gets paid peanuts, maybe, and is jealous of his boss. He should not be there if he feels that way. But like you say, that's the way it is in a lot of jobs. But I think that if the worker or the servant did not want to participate in usury, if that's the reason why he did it, then he should not have been there. He should have quit his job and gone somewhere where a master will not ask him to put the money to usury. but I can't figure out why Yahshua will mix usury, which is against the laws, in this parable without it having some purpose. Now, your arguments are correct as far as we shouldn't hide the word of God, but I just don't see how he mixed in the money issue without, and we're supposed to sort of ignore it.
He's making an allegory. We're supposed to understand it as an allegory. We're not supposed to understand it that Christ is approving our breaking the Hebrew law. He's drawing on the culture at the time to create an illustration.
Well,
and it was normal at the time for people to take money and put it in the bank, just like it's normal today. We're all breaking the Hebrew law, aren't we? Everybody in the every one of us has broken it a million times.
Yeah,
but we don't make up stories promoting breaking it.
He's not promoting breaking the law. He's using the culture at the time to draw an allegory, to make an example.
But why can't what I said work? That the master said, if you think I'm reaping where I'm not sowing, then why didn't you put my money out to usury where I could reap where I don't sow?
Because, well, in the end, the slave is still wicked.
Yeah, I know he is. I'm with you 100%. The slave is wicked. The master is good.
But Christ isn't really condoning usury and reversing the laws of in Deuteronomy through
well,
a parable.
Well, you act like he is.
Parable.
And I'm saying, hey.
Well, I'm still undecided on it. And I'd have to go back and look what I wrote years ago, probably 10 years ago, see what I had to say about it. But that was my conclusion at the time. Because you have to work only with what I have. And I don't have the knowledge of Greek and translations. All I've got are just the basic mainstream Bibles and the commentaries.
Well, right, but you should have Strong's Concordance, right?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
Well, you could look up skleros, which is the word translated hard or harsh, and see that it doesn't have anything to do with being a thief.
I think the opening verses are the lines that describe this master, I think, was what got me into the idea that he was a cunning and deceptive sort of a person.
A man traveling abroad who called his own slaves and turned over to them his properties. And while to one he had given 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his ability, then he went abroad. Immediately going, he receiving the 5 talents, conducted business with them and profited 5 others. Likewise, he with the 2 profited 2 others. But he receiving the 1, having departed, dug into the ground and hid the silver of his master. Then after much time, the master of those slaves comes and takes an account together with them. And he receiving 5 talents, coming forth, presented 5 other talents, saying, Master, you have turned over to me 5 talents. Behold, I have profited another 5 talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. With a little you were faithful, I shall appoint over you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. Coming forth also, he with the 2 talents said, Master, you turned over to me 2 talents. Behold, I have profited another 2 talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. With a little you were faithful, I shall appoint you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. Then coming forth also, he who received the 1 talent said, Master, I know you, that you are a hard man, reaping from where you have not sown and gathering from where you have not scattered. And being in fear, having departed, I hid your talent in the earth. Behold, have that which is yours. But replying, his master said to him, Wicked and timid slave, you knew that I reap from where I have not sown, and I gather from where I have not scattered. And I read that as a question. Therefore, it was necessary for you to deposit my silver with the bankers. And coming, I would have received that which is mine with interest. In other words, the slave typically knew that the master expected to reap and gather where he did not labor. So he would expect to have his coin plus whatever he could have made out of it that he didn't work for, which is basically what it says. So the slave, knowing better that his master would expect more than what he was given, was considered wicked and timid for not getting more than what he was given, for not producing with that coin more than what he was given. So take the talent from him and give it to him having the 10 talents. Now, right there, Ron, the master is rewarding the guy that made 5 talents with 5 he was given. For to each having it shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But to he not having, even that which he has shall be taken from him. And the useless slave shall be cast out into the outer darkness, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
So you're saying that the master read that one thing as a question?
Yes.
He said, you say that I reap where I didn't sow?
Yes. It's a question.
So does the master agree with him, or is he saying this is what you say?
Well, he's not necessarily agreeing with him, but he's saying that if the slave believed that, then that's how he should act it.
Exactly. So that, if he believes that, and the master didn't necessarily agree with him, that's where the usury part comes in, where that's why usury is forbidden. You reap where you didn't sow.
Well, in any case, it's the slave that's wicked. And I believe that it's an allegory of the gospel, that we should not take the knowledge we've been given, we should not take what we know and hide it. We have a compulsion to share what we believe with our brethren.
Absolutely.
I've been looking through my computer here to find where I have my notes for that, and I can't find them.
If you have this message and you don't share it, well, you're that servant that hid it in the ground.
What's the implication if the one servant with the 10 lost everything? What would happen to him then?
Well, how would he lose it? You're asking me to invent scripture or to extrapolate scripture. If you go out with this message and you get beat up and thrown in a pit, I'm sure you'll still be rewarded because you tried. And Yahweh knows the things of your heart.
But you don't know because it's not written. We don't know what would happen.
I can only conjecture, right?
I
can only conjecture.
I think
and it is written in examples later in the gospel, right? Later in the letters of Paul and James. And it is written in examples, but it's not written explicitly in his parable.
Wasn't there
Bill?
Woman that got rewarded in Haiti a little bit earlier in this discussion?
Yeah, well, she was taking her coin and she was throwing it in a pit, all right. A human cesspool, that's what she was doing with her coin.
To the wrong people, in other words.
She was trying to bury it in a human cesspool.
But doesn't the reward system ultimately make people feel that, well, then I did this, or if this was my time on earth, I did it. I'm being rewarded for what I did. And by implication that some people are going to do a lot better and some people aren't going to do it, you know, that much. It just seems like you're not even doing it for love. It's like what we do when we go out and get a job. We're doing it mostly for the reward we get out of it.
Well, I mean, that's the illustration Christ draws in the parables, in many parables. But we should understand that we seek to serve him. And to whom much is given, much will be expected. Well, I mean, that you could have many gifts and not do very much with them and have no reward. Or be found just as wicked as this wicked servant.
I'm just saying, it just seems like to me sometimes, and I mean, I'm going to make people laugh, but then we're going to have a lot of Commander McBrags up in heaven, it seems like, and saying, well, I did this, and this is all my rewards.
Well, no, I don't look at it that way. I don't look at it that way because I don't think that the people that are rewarded at all are going to be the boastful type of people that relied on their own works.
Well, another thing that comes to mind is that when he speaks of talents, he's talking of coins, but it also brings up that he's talking about talents, possibly, you know, gifts that, as you were saying, that he's bestowed upon these servants.
Well, that's a convenient. Well, maybe there are no coincidences, right? But that is a convenient coincidence, it seems to me, because the talenton is a Greek word that only, when the word was spoken, it had nothing to do except with except monetarily. Yeah, you know, the only meaning the word had was monetary.
And
it's
to
a
follow,
measure of weight.
And to follow your rules, Bill, then you, that, or the one gentleman that said a talent, like your ability, you wouldn't be able to apply that use of the word for that talent. I mean, that description.
Well, where does our word talents come from? I'm not even sure.
And that if we don't use the talents that Yahweh has bestowed upon us, that we're wasting them. And that we're doing him a disservice.
I mean, I know what a Jewish definition of talent is, and it has nothing to do with talent at all, right?
D-cup. But Martin, earlier, I'm not sure if you were here. I think you were. But when Muniker was bringing his point, Bill was saying, I forget the word, but he was saying it specifically meant one thing. But by your point of view, you're trying to say talent. You're using two meanings for talent.
Well, right. Talent, as far as talent concerned, well, Mark, your native ability. I'm trying to see what, you see, our word talent comes from this word, according to the American Heritage College Dictionary. Believe it or not, the word talent comes from the Latin and Greek word for a balance or a sum of money.
Something of value.
Yes.
The tabernacle in the wilderness, when Yahweh gave them the ability to do certain things, and they use it in order to glorify God. And if we take the talents that Yahweh has given to us, and we just, you know, just piss them away, then you know, then we've not got Yahweh. But if we use them to glorify God, then we truly prove that we are something alike.
But Martin, that was my one point. If say you did have your talent, and you went and pissed it away, and lost it. That was what I was implying. What happened if you took the servant took all that was given to him and lost it all? I mean, some of us have abilities, and you can go out and take great risk, but you may die from those risks or lose everything. What was that?
Yahweh knows your heart, though. If Yahweh knows your heart, knows that what you're doing is in order to glorify Him, then it was worth it.
In other words, if you do what Martin's saying is that if you do everything that you do for your own benefit, then you probably have nothing coming. That's what Martin's saying. And that would be deserved. That's right. And there's another parable, there's the parable of the vineyard workers, which shows that Yahweh will reward who he wants to reward regardless, because the men that enter into the vineyard early in the morning end up getting paid the same as the guys that got there at the last minute, right?
Right.
And then the guys that got there early in the morning, they're pretty pissed off about that. And Christ says to them, well, what does it have to do with you? You agreed to work all day for this amount, and because I want to bestow on these gentlemen the same amount, that has nothing to do with you.
Well, that's like in 1 Timothy chapter 6, where it talks about how that Yahweh will use people, regardless of who they are, for the purpose that they suit him. Not he doesn't what's the word I'm looking for, that he doesn't recognize who they are but rather what purpose they think it served to glorify him.
Well, that's I think that if I didn't write and do the things that I did, that I would be that serpent hiding my talent in the ground. I don't expect yet, however my life ends up and my spirit ends up, it ends up. But I feel like I'm impelled to do the things that I do. And I think that's how we should all feel. Like we better do the things that we do. We better try to wake up our brethren. We better try to reach people. And we saying go do something crazy like take over a TV studio with machine guns to make announcements, something dumb. But we have to do the things that we do. We have to make poster forums. We have to try to reach our brethren. We have to try to reach people in the street. And you don't have to be a nut about it, but every day think about what you could do for the kingdom message. That's all. It doesn't have to be something big. It could be something small. Drop a few flyers in people's mailboxes or staple a few cards to a wall in Walmart or something. You know, I got business cards made up for Christogenia, and I pinned them to walls in markets and stuff, hoping somebody will pick it up and go check out the website. I take flyers that Clifton puts out, and I drop them around the store when I go. Little things. It could be little things. It don't have to be something big, but we should all do something every day to advance the kingdom message. You don't have to go set up a soapbox in the main square of town and stand up on it. Well, we don't all have that talent, right?
Well, for the ones that do get up in a soapbox, I'd rather not be around.
Well, anyway, Kent's insight is keen because he reading that statement as a question, but his master said to him, wicked and timid servant, you knew, and he asks a question, that I reap where I have sown and I have gathered from where I have not scattered. So the servant, knowing that his master did those things, should have acted accordingly. And that's what's being said there. And I can't believe, Ron, that it's the wicked servant that's the good guy. I'm sorry.
But Bill, how come you're so adamant that Muniker's opinion or view couldn't be right?
Well, because it's really no, I don't see any language there that intones that the master is a thief or a deceiver.
Let's turn it a little bit and say that this is not a parable at all. And we're just talking here. Watch me.
But that's out-of-the-box thinking, and I think that's how you, because the Bible, or it seems like Scripture, has so much hidden in it. If you're just looking at it from one point of view, that's why most people miss it, because I don't think they're looking at it like Muniker does, where he takes it from a whole different perspective.
Well, I understand. Ron has some real good insight sometimes. But I like to think that my entire translation was out-of-the-box thinking. When I translate, I try to look at it from every possible angle. I'm not beating my chest, but the words that intone that the master was a thief or a deceiver, they just aren't there. That's all I'm saying.
But hey, Bill, how about this, Bill? Sometimes, do you ever think, with your knowledge and the way you understand things, where in the scripture says Yahweh will give knowledge to those that aren't educated, that the world would look at and say, well, he's not that smart. I mean, if we compare ourselves to you, you're very talented in the understanding of Greek and all.
No, I'm a 10th grade dropout. I'm sorry. I'm a 10th grade dropout.
But that's, but still, your mind is very sharp. I mean, none of us here really can, understand Greek like you've understood it. But I also think, do you ever wonder sometimes that just, I mean, that can maybe be your Achilles heel, that you sometimes can be so adamant that someone on a lower level than you might get a revelation.
I really don't look at anybody as being on a lower. I'm being humble. I know, but I'm being honest. I don't look at anybody as being on a lower level than me.
I just
Where in that parable does it say that the master was a thief?
I think he got that from the servant. He said the servant.
Yeah,
had
he
made
got
the
it
comment.
From the servant.
But that's playing, like a detective, though. I mean, he's looking at that total parable and trying to infer from all
of it.
Well,
right. And sometimes Ron does real good with that thinking. I know what. That's why I
that's why sometimes I don't.
Set up websites for him, But
well, I think it's very interesting. I think it's very interesting. I mean, many of us don't. I mean, that's the first time I sort of considered that possibility.
Well, I've got some others that are sitting in the little basket over here. So maybe next Monday I'll bring that one up about the wedding feast. I want to find out about that because I got an opinion on that one, too.
We're going to go back and forth on that one, too. I know it. I can smell it coming.
It does liven up the chat room, though, for one thing.
Well, that's what these open forums are for. I mean, I don't want to look like I'm beating up on anybody either, but that's what these forums are for. Yeah, you know, that's why I had the idea to have these forums.
And
so that we can hash these things out and haggle like this. I mean, where else can you do this?
Nowhere.
Not that we know of, anyway.
In Munich.
Yeah?
Yes, we had a good time, you and I, the other night. Remember when we talked for about an hour and a half after everybody went to bed?
It wasn't an hour and a half. It was 3.5 hours.
It
stopped at 1:30 and it was done at 4:30 or something like that.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say.
California, you see. That's what
I was just going to say. I was just going to contrast something. When Jesus would give his parables and then he told his disciples, he said, I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends, for a friend knows what the master does. In contrast, he's given a parable, a master to servants. So, and I think that Jesus, Yeshua, when he said, he knew what was in that wicked servant's heart, what he was already made up to be. I think he was exposing that at the end, because if we don't split the parable up and we go down to verse 33, he starts talking about separating the sheep from the goats. And I was just wondering, I was going to ask you guys, do you think we could connect that parable down to verse 33 and 34?
Well, right now I'm not sure, because I'd have to open up the book and look at it and think about it, but that's hard to say.
Well, it's all one dialogue.
Is it? Is it?
Yes.
Well, of course, the problem there, what I've seen, is a lot of times there are so many parables laid out one after the other that it's sort of like if we're going around and quoting someone that we know is famous, or even if we quoted William Fink, you know, and what some of his great sayings he comes up with, we might put them all in a row and we'd write them down. And it sounded as though he said it all in the same day, but really maybe 5 or 6 different days he had said this. So if I took each parable separately, and then you kind of looked at them as a holistic, I guess you'd call it, one body of a parable with little facets to it, then that, it might connect. But it would take a study. It would take a specific study to make that connection. How does that sound?
Yeah, then you would have like Bill said, one big dialogue.
Yeah,
which I think would be pretty cool.
Well, yeah, it should be at least harmonious. If not one long dialogue, it should be all harmonious. Like if we're speaking about a subject or we're teaching something in a schoolroom, we would be consistent in our teaching. And here, consistent in our speaking. So the parables, even if they're uttered in different days and different times, they should be harmonious.
I think that's distinguished in at least one of the gospel writers, and I'm looking for it.
It's got to be harmonious. I mean, otherwise we're really lost.
You see, Matthew consistently, in Matthew 13, he consistently uses this word again and again and again. But I don't know, there's a couple of places where it seemed to me that he may have been, by using that word, that phrase, and again he said, and again he said, that it was like maybe indicating that it was at a later time that he said this, you know?
Yeah.
Well, like if you're sitting there writing and Jesus said this and this and this, and then you think of something else he said that may have been on a different day, and he'd write, and again he said, and that appears a lot in Matthew. But
Is it like a collection or an anthology of his?
It's also in Luke too. It's in Luke 13:20, and again he said, Luke 20:12, and again he sent, and that there's a few of them, but that seems to me that was said at a later time. You know what I mean? John 8:8, and again he stooped down and wrote. Yeah, you know. Again, the Pharisees also asked him. Again, called they the man it was. It's there's a few times where it seems to me to mean that something was said at a later time, like maybe the next day or a few days later, and there's no real break in the story, you know?
Kind of like saying,
just to say, on another occasion.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, or and also, you know. Mm-hmm.
But here in chapter 25, he goes from this parable of the wicked servant, and then he just says, let me go to it so I don't screw it up. And then in verse 31, that ends in verse 30, and then in verse 31 it just says, and when the Son of Man should come in his effulgence and all the messengers with him. Yeah, you know, it's like a it seems to be like a continuous flow. I could be wrong, but it seems to be. We'd have to look at a lot of other occasions to determine if that indicates that or not. Like the rest of Matthew's writing. before I make a call on that. Yeah, you know, and sometimes that's necessary. You can't be that intimately familiar with the writing to be able to pick that right out.
Hey, Bill, you think if we were to do a cross-check on all of the, for the term weeping and gnashing of teeth, we might be able to get some harmony on that, with that term?
No, we'd have to look at all the parables and where Matthew, you know, just starts the next sentence with that conjunction to see if any of them really were at a totally different time. You know what I mean?
I understand.
Because he only starts this next sentence with the conjunction. And actually, it's still quoting Christ without any break, which kind of leads me to believe that it's the same spiel, the same, I probably shouldn't use spiel, it's a Jewish word, right? But the same diatribe, the same...
It's German.
Conversation. Is spiel German, really?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it means play. Play.
Thank you.
You're
now
okay,
I don't feel
there.
So bad. Well, there's a lot of German. Words that I don't know if they came to me from Yiddish or German or from TV when I was a kid or school or what, you know. Try not to use those, like schlep is a Yiddish word. Try not to use those Yiddish words. So it seems, you know, because Christ is still talking and Matthew adds no words in, and then 31 goes right into more words of Christ. Verse 31, it seems to me like the same exact conversation. Because there's really no break. It's only a man-made paragraph. The paragraph is, it's we made the paragraph. I mean, so that we could break it up into logical sections, right? But in Greek, they didn't have that paragraph.
Or
the exclamation point. Yeah, right. Or illogical sections. And a lot of them are.
Same. What about Psalms? The way the Psalms are broken up.
Well, the Psalms are written as separate songs. Each psalm is a separate song, and they were actually written in a meter that's lost to us. And you know, you can't. There's no way. I mean, maybe Christ could do it, but men can't do it. To make a translation with the same meter, I mean, it would be incredible to be able to do that. To take something out of one language and put it in another and maintain the meter, that would just be incredible. If you know what meter is a series of
time.
Each line would have the same number of syllables, and it would be in not rhyming, because ancient poetry did not rhyme. But what it did was it had the same pattern of high and low syllables on each line or on given lines that allowed the person who recited it to set a cadence. That's how all the epic poetry was. That's how the Exodus was originally written, too.
Well, when you say high and low, you mean you're referring to tone, right?
Well, yeah, I'm referring to the accents on vowels.
Okay.
Like poetry.
Well, right. The Psalms are poetry.
Yeah.
But the Exodus is also
rhyming.
The Exodus, well, ancient poetry did not rhyme. The ancient Greek poems did not rhyme. Rhyming is, you know, came into, I think, English probably around the 16th century.
But the cadence of it all, as it goes along, is what you're talking about.
Well, right, and the Greeks had all different patterns, and they gave them names, like iambic pentameter. Yeah, you know that. Pentameter would mean that every line had 5 meters, which, and each meter would consist of a short syllable and a long syllable, or vice versa.
Didn't they do that to help with the memory of remembering the longer,
absolutely,
like the Odyssey and if they wanted, if someone wanted to remember that, they'd have that particular pattern.
Right. And that would help them remember, because it was hard to screw up, because you knew if you changed the word and it had a short syllable instead of a long syllable, or it had a different number of syllables, it would just screw everything up.
But wouldn't it be sort of hypnotic to the people that are listening to it?
Yeah, no doubt. And just like our modern music, rock music can be very hypnotic, especially the dance type music like disco and the dance hall music that has that constant same beat over and over and over again. It would be just like that.
Yeah. So the Odyssey's heavy metal in ancient Greece.
Yeah, right.
Nothing new.
Nope. And they did recite that to music quite often. And if you see on a lot of the Psalms, it says, for the harp, for the psaltery. And that meant that they were supposed to be sung to music. And the difference between the Psalms and our profane music is that the Psalms all glorify God and don't glorify profane, disgusting things like Jewish sex orgies, Canaanite fertility rituals, like today's music does, drugs and death and destruction.
Keep going.
I have a question. If we would have lived under the perfect laws of Yahweh, how far advanced in technology would we have gone? What would our society have looked like? Or would we resemble something like the Amish way of life?
Well, you know, the Amish, they despise technology and they have no need to. Technology is good. I mean, if you can build something that can, a tool that could help your fellow man do something, then that can only be good. I don't think that we would have mass production. I see it would be difficult for us to live under the perfect laws without a usury-based economy and have the mass production economy that we have today. I mean, it probably could be done, but whether we would want to do that is a different story.
The implication is that they did it in the past, but they had nothing but the bare minimum of technology.
But did we? I don't think we ever had a mass production society in the past where we could churn out through factory drones a million of the same object that all are all exactly the same.
Yeah,
but would we need that if we didn't have all the other races?
Well, we probably wouldn't, and I think it would be somewhere in between, Joe. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Amish, they forego a lot of things that can be built in a workshop. And they forego them. I mean, you can build a radio in a workshop. And a radio can be a good tool.
Well, I think electricity, plumbing, all that is excellent. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
No, I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, the first plumbing was actually in ancient Cyprus about 3,000 years ago. The first indoor plumbing. It didn't work as well as our indoor plumbing worked, but it worked.
But how would people... I guess my question is more, we wouldn't be working on a pay system then. For example.
Well, if you own a farm and I don't, and I volunteer to work your farm, I mean, what's wrong with that? I'll work your farm and you give me so much so much of the grain and fruits and vegetables from your farm, and I'll be able to trade some of them off for some of the other things I need, right?
I think the big objection to mass production is the dehumanizing of the production line, like the Henry Ford type, where one man does one thing. There are no craftsmen where they make the entire car, assemble the entire car, but they only put the hood on. And it skips to sort of dehumanizing. I don't know if the Amish raised that up as a reason, but mass production as it is now is just... Everyone has a little part, and they don't really do anything other than one thing.
Well, what mass production has done more than anything, I think, is it's taken all the knowledge of how to make the things we need for daily living. It's taken it all away from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you say the gasoline engine is an evil invention?
Ultimately? No, I don't think there are any evil inventions by man.
It's what we do with them.
Used is often evil, but I don't think there are any evil inventions by man. Well, I mean, you know, aside from the obvious violations of the law, such as vaccinations and farmer's hire and things like that.
I just meant more in the sense with the pollution it gives off. It's not in that regard. Would it be better not to have opened that Pandora's box?
Well, if we're just burning oil, then we're only producing CO2 from it as a byproduct, right? I mean, is there anything else that's really polluting?
I wasn't sure. That's why I asked to put it out there. Would other people?
I don't see a problem with burning oil. I mean, the ancient Hebrews burned oil in their lamps.
The implication is we're burning up a lot more than they did, and it's upsetting the.
So we're creating a lot more plant food than they did.
Yeah, but they weren't burning crude oil.
They talked about crude oil in Scripture. The oil that comes from the shale. They talked about shale oil in Scripture. It's mentioned in Scripture. They knew about it. I don't have a problem with burning oil.
Isn't there a connection between shale and shale?
Shale and what?
I'm kind of stretching it. But shale and shale? S-H-E-O-L?
Oh, like in hell, in other words?
Yeah.
No, there's kind of no connection. I don't think. I'd have to get my dictionary back out.
Genetic anomaly.
Where is it? I think it might be in Job. It's been a long time since I tried looking up this verse. What's this in Job 29:6? When I washed my steps with butter and the rock poured me out rivers of oil.
Could you say that one again?
Job 29:6, when I washed my steps with butter and the rock poured me out rivers of oil.
When I washed my steps with butter.
Yeah, it's a weird, but I mean it's describing oil that comes out of a rock.
Huh.
But that's not the verse I had in mind. I don't know if I'll be able to find the verse I had in mind. Here we go. Yes, I did. Deuteronomy 32:13. He made me ride on the high places of the earth that he might eat the increase of the fields. And he made him to suck honey out of the rock and oil out of the flinty rock. To me, that's shale oil. Oil out of the flinty rock.
Hey, Bill, are you sure that's not the rock sitting underneath that chair?
Well, what could it be? Oil out of the flinty rock? That has to be shale oil.
That sounds better than the one sitting underneath the chair.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the.
He's talking about the Son of Jacob, the coronation stone.
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like shale oil to me. It sounds like crude oil to me.
But that's not really flinty. Flinty implies that it's got mixed sparks, you know, like a flint rock or a flintlock rifle, where there's a little. But they call it the little stone they put in there, and it'll make sparks, flints. How they can get oil from a flinty from the
flinty is the best translation for the word is flint as we think about it today, but it's related to a word for hardness that means hardness.
I've got a PC study Bible, which has all the mainstream Bibles in it, you know. So far, they all say flinty.
Well, only one kind of oil comes out of rock, and that's crude oil.
Geneva Bible has hard rock.
That's probably a better translation.
Yes, Greek fire was pretty wicked. I don't know if they know exactly what it was made out of, Mercado. I mean, it's another thing that's... It's speculated that it could have been made out of blobs of oil, and that was what they called asbestos in the Dead Sea. Herodotus called it asbestos, but it was probably what we know as cold, hardened blobs of oil that rose to the surface of the Dead Sea.
What did they do? They just set them on fire and throw them at people?
Well, you know, it's supposed that that's what Greek fire was made out of, but we really don't know what it was made out of. But it was, you know, they didn't know how to stop it from burning. And the Greeks would shoot it out of catapults onto other ships while they were at war. And it was called Greek fire.
I thought that Dead Sea stuff was asphalt.
it was all burning, and it was well, Kent, it was called asphalt by the Greeks, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was asphalt as we know it. The word that we use for asphalt comes from that Greek word, but that doesn't mean it was asphalt as we know it.
Oh, I thought they were using that stuff as mortar, which asphalt, of course, could be used for.
Yeah, absolutely. And they actually called the place asphaltitis after that.
I read once where Sodom was selling that stuff for mortar.
I wouldn't doubt if Sodom... I think Sodom and Gomorrah are probably under the Dead Sea.
Yeah, they're probably immersed in that stuff.
Yeah, actually, about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, they said that they found archaeological remains near the Dead Sea, which were locations. They found some sort of charred remains where Sodom and Gomorrah would be. But
it would be pretty cool.
Another thing about the Greeks was, I believe, that the first magnets that were ever spoken of were found in a place in Greece called Magnesia. Verify that, or...
It sounds plausible, but I'm not 100% positive. I remember reading something about the magnetic rock, but I can't place it in my mind.
That it had picked up its charge by being hit by so much lightning or something like that. And also, they were experimenting with the amber, and that's where they got the word electron from. So most of the high thinking was in Athens, though, right? As far as the Greeks were concerned.
No, I mean, Athens became a cultured center of learning after it was rebuilt after the Persian Wars. But I mean, there were many centers of thinking and learning in Greece. Corinth and Tarsus are two big centers of learning.
Where is that again?
Corinth and Tarsus were two very cultured cities and centers of learning. But it seems that from after the 5th century B.C., all of the philosophers always flocked to Athens, yes.
And I think Pythagoras was from Ionia.
I don't know if I know where Pythagoras was from. And all his work is lost. All his original work is gone.
Yeah, he was the one who didn't want to walk on beans, because he felt that they were living beings or something like that.
I would not take anything written about Pythagoras and attribute it to Pythagoras, because a lot of things were attributed to Pythagoras that that are highly suspect. And since all the man's work is lost, I wouldn't go there. I personally wouldn't.
Did now, you say where you wouldn't walk on beans, as in pot of beans?
Yeah, he actually had his own...
Well, why don't you guys hold this down for me for a few minutes? I'll be back in 10 minutes. I got to walk my puppy.
Hey, quick question.
What's up?
So Tarsus, which is where Paul was from, is that in modern day Turkey?
Yeah.
That's okay. And Corinth, but Corinth is in Greece, right? Is modern day Greece.
Corinth is on the isthmus between the Peloponnesus and the mainland. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to.
It's in the Peloponnesus, but it was right next to the isthmus.
And there were other.
Okay, well, hold this down for me, or keep the conversation going or something for 10 minutes. I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Pet Sam and Samson on the
phone. Ken, I'll see you when I come back. God bless, and thanks for stopping.
Good night, gentlemen. Thank you.
God bless.
See you next time.
So, how did you come up with the moniker Municher?
One of the first books I scanned here in this rickety old thing I got was a book called Munich, Spirit of This German City. It's on my website. Find it here. Go to it now, because I closed it. And I'd like to have him put it over in his Mein Kampf site. I could, but I have to talk to him about that.
It's a book about Munich?
Yeah, it's about the city of Munich. At the time Adolf Hitler was in power, and he Adolf Hitler always thought that... He always thought that it was that Munich was the center of
I'm looking and talking to Santana. He thought that Munich was the beginnings of the National Socialist movement, and that it had the strongest adherence came from Munich. So he always had a good soft spot for that city. If you were to go to gentlecynic.net and then click on books and articles by others, it's on the right column, books and articles by others, and then scroll down past all these interesting books I found. And
what's the name of the site called?
Go GENTLETYNIC, Gentle Cynic.
Okay.
And then
.net.
And then, yeah, and then go over there to the right-hand column and scroll down to where it says books by others, and then books and articles by others really is the link. And when you get there, scroll down quite a ways past the books on Bolshevism and Communism, which I put up in there. And then you'll find it's a unique, if not also original, publications of National Socialism. Go scrolling down a bunch of those, and then you'll see Munich, Spirit of a German City, published in Germany, 1939, English language edition.
Yeah, actually, I was over in Germany back in the early 80s. And
yeah.
Went to Koenigsegg, and where the Eagle's Nest is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
David
Irving got a tour going over there in September. I haven't got enough money to go. It's going to take people through the tour, explain Hitler's headquarters and stuff like that, and that'd be a real memory of a lifetime. It doesn't cost
like
much.
It was like being in heaven.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you like David Irving, he's something of a tough nut, but you'll have people around. You got to have a thick skin. I imagine there'll be protesters bellyaching the fact that he's out there. He's going to go over to Treblinka, I think it is. And look at some of the purported Holocaust places, you know.
Yeah, all the Holocaust BS.
I have clicked on that book of mine, and it's taking a long time to come up. Should be up by now.
Okay, so I see the Pelly, and I'm looking at books. Books and articles by others. Okay, got it.
I found that book. It's a large file for the person.
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah, it is. In fact, it's my own book. It's 275 megabytes, but it's a lot of, I don't know how many pages it is, but it does take a while to come up. I don't know why, but it does. This is big, I guess. Of course, my computer's pretty old. I mean,
well, 275 megabytes takes a long time to download.
Yeah, maybe I should put it in parts, you know, like chapters. It's going to be this long.
I would recommend that because the average person, they would just say it's too long.
Yeah, impatient, yeah. I'll make it into chapters. So I'll have to... Well, I've got each page, and I could just combine those into chapters. That'd be pretty easy to do, I guess.
Well,
yeah,
definitely,
yeah, I mean... Yeah, go ahead.
And I definitely think that would be the way to go. I would keep it on... I mean, at least under 20, but I would say more around 10 megs. People can handle that, I think.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. Let's see.
I won't go crazy over because I don't know how many people are downloading this book either. But, I mean, it's just something you could hit download and just come back in about 20 minutes for. I mean, it's not that.
Yeah, it's true. That's true, it is. He's going to – Bill's going to show me how I can put on a little icon where I can have a little PDF icon, you know, right next to the book, I guess, or the link, and they can download it directly that way and probably go down a lot faster than opening it up. I don't know. We'll have to ask them about that. But I think probably chapters is – it's an interesting read. It just talks about Munich of the day. It has some images in it. But it is kind of big.
When you put something in a link, what happens when you click on it is often determined by the user. If you know that the link goes to a PDF file, you could right-click it and hit Save As, rather than click on it and have it open in a window in your browser. But it's not going to come...
When I do that Go ahead.
It's not going to come down any faster, though. Not generally.
But would it free up the web page so you can go look somewhere else while it's doing it?
Well, yeah.
I'm putting my little pointer on Munich, and I'll right-click, and it doesn't say link as. It doesn't say anything about save file as.
Does it say save link as?
Yeah.
Well, there you go, or save linked content as. The message differs from browser to browser, but they all have the same ability.
Okay.
Does it say save target?
Save target's another one. That's Firefox, I think.
I got that, and it doesn't say that.
well, then save target must be Explorer, Internet Explorer.
It's Explorer. Yeah, it's Explorer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was recommended by one of the listeners here that I should divide that Munich book into kind of like chapters, smaller sizes, because it's taking too long to upload, and I haven't opened up very often at all once I put it on there. So I think I'll have to do that, make it divide that into chapters and see if I can get it smaller, open up.
Well, why don't you go to this site and see what I did with the book on this site? Let me type it in. It's the top link on the left-hand side. And I put one image per page in a book, and you could click on the bottom and navigate to the next one, and to the next one, and to the next one.
Paul Sensius?
Sensius.
Sensius.
Some of them I've added the text into the pages. I have to go back and clean it up a little, and eventually they will all have the text on it. Because it's OCR, I just have to clean it up.
Now, I have a map. There's a Europe 814 map page I should be looking at.
I don't know about all that.
It's under Documents, top left.
Let me go like this here.
It says Node 104.
I don't know how I got there, but I did. Okay, here you go. Now I've got the wings. Two names for them. There's not
the lions.
Seraphim.
Yeah, the lions with the two wings.
Yeah, is it seraphim? Is that it, or cherubim?
They're cherubs. Yeah, they're sphinxes.
Is it
they're a variation of the sphinx anyway, winged lions.
Yeah. They're cherubims.
They're not truly sphinxes, but they're really winged lions.
So I'll click on the map then. Well, it goes right back to it. This is a good map.
No, I'll give you the actual. It's the top left under Documents.
Oh, I see it. In the German language there?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's the link in the form.
I see. Okay.
Now that's a book that's scanned in, right?
Yeah.
And each image is on one page. And at the bottom, you'll see there's links to get to the next page or back up to the table of context.
Okay.
And you could do that really pretty easily with the Munich book on your General Cynic site. I'll show you how to do it.
Okay.
Some of them I have the text, you know, because it's been OCR'd. I got the whole thing here. I got to put the rest of it in.
So each page would have to be worked in, right?
Yeah, but you already have them uploaded, I think, so.
I have a PDF there, but I've got the individual pages over here that I scanned in. And I can work with those. Okay. Now, this is... So you have to understand German to read this, huh? No kidding.
Yeah, right, but the English will be there soon.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, it might be a few months, but the English will be there.
You have someone translating to me?
Yes.
Paul Sensius.
This is, he was Identity. He wrote this book saying that the 12 tribes are the German people. It was published in 1931.
What does the title translate, do you know? Did they tell you?
Yeah, you know, they've told me a few times, but I can never remember it. I'm an idiot.
Something Israelite and German.
Something about the Israelite origin of the German people, the Germans.
Damn it. Okay, well, I've got on my bookmarks here, I've got a tab, okay, and I went down here. It's a language dictionary website. Find it here. The language dictionary. Now, we're looking at STAMME. Okay, and we'll go German to English. Trunk, T-R-U-N-K, or tribe. Volkstam or Volkstam tribe. That's what I like it, huh? V-O-L-K-S-S-T-A-M-M. Volkstam tribe.
Okay.
So it says the tribe of Israel and Germany, or German.
The tribes of Israel or German. Okay.
I think Unt. Let me look under Unt to make sure what that says.
What happened?
I don't know what happened.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking to my dog.
Oh, yeah. Unt and. Yeah, and. The tribes of Israel and German. Germany, I guess. R-M-A-N-E-N, I think it is over there. Yeah.
Well, when they told me what it meant, I think they filled in some of the blanks or something.
Yeah.
I guess they had to.
Yeah, of German, yeah. Ancient German. Germaninen. E-R-M-A-N-I-N-N-E-N. Ancient German. Yeah. Israel and the ancient Germans. How about that?
Well, it'll be an interesting book when it's translated.
Yeah, okay.
And I know that the Jew Yair Davidi has quoted from it. It'd be interesting to see if the Jew bastard quoted from it accurately. Probably not, right? But I don't really care anyway. I just want to stick my finger in the eye of the British Israel idiots every chance I get.
Yep.
Which is why I have right on the front page, to hell with British Israel, the Germans are Israel too. To hell with the VIWF, the Germans are Israel too.
they had in this
and Focus Christian picked right up on the irony of the logo I selected for the site. Because the logo is the logo is Assyrian, and the British Israel World Federation always calls the Germans Assyrians, right?
Yeah. I think some Germans, as far as a label is concerned, I think they are Assyrians.
Well, some Germans are Slavs. They're not Germans, but there's a whole lot of Germans in Germany that are Germans and not Slavs, right? And they're not Assyrians.
Right. That's right. So there could be, in a sense, those three different races of people in the same geographical land area.
Well, there's a lot of Slavs in England, too. There's a lot of Slavs in England, too. A lot of Slavs were sold into England as slaves.
Yeah, but it did them.
That's where the word came from. That's where the word for slave came from.
Yeah.
Japheth will dwell in the tents of Shem. There's no way around it. And the Assyrians are actually Shemites. They're not even Japhethites.
I've read, or else maybe I've come to the conclusion, more likely, that the Prussians, the real militaristic Prussians, they were descended from the Assyrians just by their constant fighting among everybody. I remember reading...
Well, Judah was always the fighting tribe in Israel, too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're actually pointed out for that a few times.
And they're the one tribe that comes from an illegitimate... You know, all the other sons were, and their children were born, quote, legitimate, whereas Judah, man, did not marry Tamar. She had to bear those children without a lawful husband, put it that way, you know, we would call it today. And so this is why the Jews in the Old Testament and the New Testament could look back, criticize Jesus, who was a descendant of Judah, and say, we Jews were not born of fornication, because Judah ran off with this Canaanite, right, and had those three sons.
An interesting way to look at that, Ron. That's a way I never really thought. That there were definitely Shelahite Jews around too, but they're not evident in history.
No,
the Shelahite Jews.
I'd like to know who they are, because the Jews know who they are, but the white people really don't know the Jews, and they don't even know that they themselves are Israelites. So the Shelahite descendants of Judah would be among those who are outside, if not Jews, and they're outside of the family circle where you could marry some person that's within the Israelite circle. You know. But I think that the Assyrians are, they went over after the Assyria collapsed and all the Israelites went over the mountain range. Apparently, a lot of the Assyrians went along with them. among what we now call Germany were settled up more in Prussia.
That was a matter of prophecy, that you will take captive those who took you captive. It's right in Isaiah. And there's no doubt that, and we find from Herodotus, from Diodorus Siculus, that when the Scythians crossed the Caucasus Mountains and withdrew from Asia, and Diodorus Siculus states this explicitly, that they took tribes of the Medes and the Assyrians captive with them. That's stated explicitly by Diodorus Siculus. I quoted enough. It might be in German Origins number one, but it's in one of them. I know that.
I have something here on the Syrians and grabbing. I'll see if I can find it here.
Well, what else is going on tonight? We can't have that. That can't be it. Everything we spoke about has got to be
more than that. I found this thing on Google that Google will translate entire pages for you.
Yes, they will. I don't know about the accuracy of it, though, so I really don't mess with it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to computerized translation is far from perfect.
Yeah.
It's a good laugh, though. Grammatically, it's a good laugh. Here's some quotes I found. I'll try to find through them. Where it describes Assyrians as soldiers and little else. It says the sister states of Babylonia and Assyria differed essentially in character. Babylonia was a land of merchants and agriculturists. Syria was an organized camp. The Assyrian dynasties were founded by successful generals. Let's see what else. Bureaucracy. The Assyrian people were soldiers and little else. Hence the sudden collapse of Assyria when drained of its fighting population. Now, somehow or another, in 500 B.C., they had a drain of their fighting population. I don't know quite what that means.
500 B.C.? Well, it was about 612 B.C. that the Scythians, in harmony with some tribes and the Medes, destroyed Nineveh and its principal cities of Assyria. And it wasn't long after that time that the Scythians basically moved out of Asia and across the Caucasus. Moved out of Mesopotamia and Asia and across the Caucasus. Not every one of them left, but a great number of them did. Herodotus said they ruled all of Asia for 28 years or something like that. And it was during that time, and I can demonstrate, and a lot of historians miss it, but I could demonstrate that it was during that time that Nineveh fell. Even though historically the Medes got the credit for destroying Nineveh. It was during the time that the Scythians ruled all of Asia.
Have you gotten the full page translated by chance?
Yeah, well, look, there's a couple of pages up there on that site, Mark.
Because the translation that I did on the first page it's not great, but it's not definitely get a lot out of it. What want me to rattle it off real quick?
Well, why don't you just do me a favor and email me the link so I know where to go.
It's just go to Google Translate.
Google Translate.
Google
Translate in Google, right?
Just cut and copy. Just copy and paste the whole thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll play with that tomorrow. I got another project going on, but I'll probably get to a little bit of this at least tomorrow.
Oh, I see. On Google, you click on More, and then Books, Finance, Translate, the third one down. Is that the way it goes? That's how mine is. Okay.
I think I used it once before. I used Google Translate on a page.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You click on Translate, and then you got a little box where you can paste your stuff in there. And it says Translate from, detect language, translate into English. Okay. Yeah. Well, the problem is with this... with this German book, we can't copy the text.
Well, I got some of it in there, and I got to get the rest of it in there.
Oh, I
some
see.
Of it's
here
in there,
here.
Ron. Okay, in the early pages.
Yeah, okay. I didn't.
You know what happened? I stopped. You know why I stopped putting it up? Because there's some Hebrew in the text, And the dumb word processor was reversing the order of the Hebrew characters. So I got to, yeah, it's a pain in the butt. So I got to make sure that they get in right because I don't want them to all show up backwards. So I stopped until I had time to mess with the Hebrews.
Yeah. Okay, I'll click more and click translate. And I'll paste it in there like that. And I'll click detect language. Well, I've done this German. Okay. English translate. And it's done. Huh, that fast. What? Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't spell the words always complete either. It gets you close. Here's a good sentence. Whatever it is in German, it says here, this is now but the Old Testament. More than its historical information on relevant material effects, hyphen, some observations necessary, because the Old Testament scholarship is often only the narrow circle of scholars known. Then go the history books of Old Testament, especially the back five books of Moses, to different sources and parallel accounts. But they did the best they could. Throw me down the stairs, the key. Okay, well, at least we know that works. In a pinch, we know where to go.
Now, but the Old Testament. More than the full information versions, necessary, because the Old Testament scholarship is often only known. Go the history of books of the Old Testament, especially the back books of parallel account.
Yeah, that's from page 5.
According to the Babylonian captivity, Old Testament. This source analysis, not without opposition, especially where they went down into about some agreement. Old Testament writing.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of translating it, but it gets it close enough to where you have an idea. Tribute to a better translation, it says down there. Well, yeah, how are you going to do that? Oh, I see, you're supposed to edit it and then put it in.
Sorry, Spider, I didn't see your flag down there. You should have typed something like, wake up.
I was typing.
You know, they have this thing on the internet now where you can speak with an attorney, and if you have a credit card, you like a video Skype conversation where they're waiting 24 hours a day.
How much does that cost?
Yeah, right.
It's okay. Well, actually, there's a free one. It's called Avvo, AVVO.com, where different attorneys respond to your question for free.
How about Skype a kike? That'd be a cool name.
For what it's worth.
Skypeakike.com.
Help not con, C-O-N.
Yeah, right.
I was wondering how long it'd take before anybody comes up. Even doctors, I think you can call nurses. If there's nurses that you can call up, it'll charge you money, but I guess if it solves your problem, it's worth it, you know. But I've seen
all they're going to do is make a new problem.
Yeah, once they solve your problem, they'll create another problem out of your problem. Yeah, that's what they'll do.
Skype a kike. That's good.
Bill, you're awake.
There was actually a case law here in Florida where they used information from people that people that were parties in cases asking of these sites, and they actually used it.
Of the user advice on this AVVO, me?
Yeah, because apparently whatever you ask is be looked at by the authorities.
Well, of course.
Probably one of the reasons why it was set up.
Yeah.
Right, I think I went to a doctor last, I was 19.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30 years.
Dr. West?
No, the last time I went to a doctor, I was 19.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I had tonsillitis. And then there were probably better ways to handle that then, but I never had my tonsils removed. I would never go get them taken out. I still have them.
Some dentist said, he'd look at me, he says, I see you had your tonsils removed. And I says, I don't remember it. It seems to me I'd remember it even if I was a kid, you know. All the ice
cream
you
can eat.
Yeah, well,
that's when most people get them removed is when they're children.
Yeah. And for a while there, a couple of generations ago, that was the bread and butter of every doctor out there. You got your kidney, your appendix taken out. You got your adenoids taken out. You got your tonsils taken out. That was surgery, you know. And I still have all my parts. You know, it made the doctors rich. But unfortunately, all those three items are the biggest immune defense we've got. And they're taking them out so they can get us sick, and we have to go to them and make even more money off of us.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's really just amazing how they, and just so blatant.
That's Satan's game.
Yep.
And we fall for it every time. Replacing God.
Yeah, same thing with these beasts of the field, you know, raising their station above that of white Adam and man. It's a perversion of God's will.
Yeah, but because we don't know who we are and we don't know what to do about it. It's just much our fault.
Yeah, and we've been brainwashed into all the guilt and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Muniker, have you ever seen the film, the Jutsus?
What's all that clunking around back there? It's interfering with your voice. Maybe that's Bill. Have I seen which again?
The film Jutsus.
Jutsus? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it was made back in the 30s sometime.
Jutsus. Yeah, Martin, I got it.
Oh, you did? Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's an awesome flick where they hang that no good demon at the
piece
end.
Piece of garbage.
Yeah, they hang it. The people in the community wake up and they realize where they're rotten out.
Oh, I was only a servant of the Duke. I was just doing my job to serve the community.
How do you spell this title of this movie?
Actually, Papa Cat wrote it down in the chat box.
Yeah? Well, let me look and see if I still get it.
Actually, you can find it on WNTube.com. Yeah, but actually, Michael.
Yes.
Wasn't it ironic how the first thing that he tried to take over was the roads?
Yes. It's been a long time since I saw it. I saw it back in 04. I got it from a friend of mine that got it from Pete Peters.
And that's the same thing that's going on today. They're privatizing everything and buying, you know, getting our resources out right out from underneath us.
Exactly. He was manipulating the Duke just like they manipulate our Congress and our Senate, all three branches of our.
I heard that out in California they're starting to sell the state wholesale these days.
Say that again.
I heard that out in California that they're starting to sell off the state wholesale these days. There's a thing about selling Alcatraz.
I haven't followed it. I don't have television. See, all I have is my radio. Okay. But I do know they just elected another Santa Clara County just elected a beast of the field for their attorney. What do you call it? District attorney there in Santa Clara County.
Is that where you're at?
No, I'm just east of San Francisco, about 45 miles.
Looking for that title here, but it must have been way up. Just scroll through the message.
Well, did you go to a WNTube.com?
I'll go there. Is it www?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because sometimes, like with
I don't know if you have to type that in or not, but it's on that.
Yeah, here it is.
Okay.
I got it here now. It's coming. There you go. Okay. Never heard of this. Wow. Oh, look at this. Jude Seuss. Okay. Yeah. I'll be dog, said the cat. This. Well.
It's like 93 minutes.
Hour and 33 minutes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Added 113 days ago.
Have you ever seen that at Pot Blanc?
A long time ago I did, but I haven't been there for a long time. To an extent, I can spend a lot of my time looking at videos and things like that, and I'd never get anything done.
Yeah, you guys, Martin might my see my my computer. It's a new computer. It's a laptop, but the tube doesn't work on it. When I go to like YouTube or anything that plays, it won't play it. It'll stop. It'll play for 5 seconds
maybe you
and
need
then
to,
stop.
Maybe you need to change your flash driver.
Well, I don't have a. I don't think I have a flash driver. See, they, when my friend told me, the problem is I don't have a phone line. If I had a phone line connected to it, then it would probably work better. But it just it doesn't work at all.
What do you have now? What do you have now?
I just got a little laptop.
I mean,
yeah, but you're on satellite, right?
Well, no, I'm on Verizon. What do they call that? Where you don't have a phone line, you plug the little plastic connector into the side in order to get the signal.
Yeah, you're on satellite.
Okay.
Like a wireless, you mean?
Yeah,
he's on a satellite card. Well, no, actually, it wouldn't be satellite, but it's a. I guess it's hooked up to the cell phones.
Yeah,
yeah, it's Verizon Wireless. It's through the cell phone system.
Yeah.
So he has to get a good signal. He has to be near one of these broadcasting towers to get a good solid signal.
Right, but it's the same chance as you would with a cell phone.
Yeah.
So, Michael, you can't go to Chris Degenninger and check out a video or anything?
Yeah, as soon as I hit play. It plays for 2-3 seconds, then it stops for 15-20 seconds, and then it plays another 2-3 seconds, and then stops, and then eventually it just drops.
You know what you need to do? You need to pause it and let it buffer, let it load all the way up, and then you can watch it all the way through.
I did that, and it didn't work. I went to ProSync, and I did that on theirs, and it would not work at all.
That's bizarre.
And yeah, my friend told me it's because... it's a weak signal, and he said it's because I don't have a phone line. If I had a phone line where it's this high-speed stuff, I didn't know what he was talking about, where it's a high speed, then he said I would be able to get it.
Yeah, DSL.
Yeah, that's right, DSL. And I called AT&T to try to come out, and they want $1,000 to come out and set the pole up and run the fiber optic and everything, and I don't have it. I don't have that the kind of money to throw away right now.
It must be in the boonies.
Yeah, I live in my old trailer on a ranch.
40 miles east of San Francisco, and you're in the boonies?
Yeah, right on the outskirts of Livermore, right on the county line, right next to the freeway. They own 200 acres here, commercial property that hasn't been developed, so I live right here.
You would think that area would probably be one of the most wired, and I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, just San Francisco itself being there.
Well, I know areas 40 miles from New York City, maybe not now, but in 95, that were pretty sparsely populated.
Well, what's interesting? If you take the GW Bridge over into New Jersey and go into the Palisades, it's like, you're in the most populous area of the world, and then you go right across the bridge, and you're out in a rural setting.
Yeah, that's because Bergen County land is incredibly expensive. That's why it's so undeveloped there.
That's a good way to keep them out.
Well, Bergen, there is. Martin's right. There's one stretch, along the Palisades Interstate Parkway in Bergen County, New Jersey, that is very undeveloped, but that's because it's so expensive there. Alpine, New Jersey, you can't touch a house without $5, $6 million. That's the way it was 14 years ago. I'm sure it hasn't changed much.
Yeah, that area of the country will keep themselves well buffered. That's how they do it.
But you go 20 miles south and you're in Jersey and you didn't think you left New York,
Michael, what's your zip code?
I'm sorry, I didn't see that. It is 94550.
You said 94550?
Yeah.
He's so far out of boonies, he don't have a zip code.
They have a box they toss it into.
Yeah.
Come get it sometime next week.
I just went on the Clear website, and I entered his zip code and said it wasn't available. That's that internet coverage you can get. That's kind of wireless when you're all throughout the city.
Is this too far away, huh?
Yeah, it was
$30. Well, my friend's waiting. Yeah, my friend's waiting to get some type of a radio connector to put back on top of the barn to connect into the main house at the ranch here. I will go on, they'll connect me to what's up their wavelength, and then if it works, then I'll cancel my Verizon, and then it'll be free.
If you have a contract and you cancel it with Verizon?
Yeah, so every time you make, every time I pay my $65,
yeah, the reception, your reception is horrible.
It's fine with what we're doing right now, but if I go to try to do the thing, you know, like last night you got something, it won't work. Bill's site or Mike, it won't work.
Michael, did you ever test your download speed?
I'm still looking at the computer that's kind of like breaking
down. Yeah, you're really breaking up bad.
Is that Michael breaking up or is it my computer?
No, I think it's him because it's not mine.
No, am I breaking up again?
Yeah, it's like the first 5 seconds that when you start speaking, it's fine. And then it just fades in, and then it just starts warbling out from there.
Well, I'm going to end the recording on this note. I mean, we could all keep hanging out, right?
But there really isn't anything useful going on, so.
Yeah. No. Quibble on the important stuff next Monday.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. You can call me tomorrow sometime, Bill?
Yes, I will call you tomorrow sometime.
Okay.
During the day.
Okay. All righty.
Praise Yahweh.
I'll be here, okay?